Blog Talk Radio.
All right, good evening, everyone. This is John Durash with National Liberty Alliance. We're on Blog Talk Radio. This is our second program. Gerard, by the way, am I coming through? Maybe you can kind of pipe in here and make sure my voice is coming through. I didn't see a button to push, so. And maybe people in the text chat, if you're hearing me, maybe, you know, let me know you're hearing me. Give me a one or something. Am I coming through there, Gerard?
I can hear you. My chat, something, my window's a little different this time. The chat's down on the left. I couldn't find it for a minute. I'm going to open up the
Well,
chat
we should be live right now, so yeah, I guess we're going to have to deal with these little quirks till we understand how to really work this thing. But, okay, we're coming through. I see Steve from North Carolina says we're coming through. Okay, anyway, we've got a lot to share tonight. We're going to have Hagan Smith from Florida. He's going to be on in a couple of minutes. He's going to be sharing with us what's going on down in Florida. He's got some interesting news to give us. Just to let everybody know, we're working on the website, and it's coming along pretty good. I've been working on the content all week. I got a bad cold, so if I sound a little strange, I guess it is what it is. But anyway, I've been working on the content all week, And I got all the content up on the website. We hired a couple of people who went out there working on the framework and working on all the connections on the inner workings of the program. And things are coming along pretty good. I'm pretty impressed by the way the site looks. I like it. Hopefully everyone else will too. It's going to be very interactive. We got a lot more going on this new site than was on the old site, of course, the site that we're still using. One of the really neat things we've got going is we have a chat room that's going to be open 24/7. It's a national chat room. People can go in there and meet other people and text chat. And every Monday from 9 p.m. to 12 p.m., or 12 a.m., shall I say, 3 hours from 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time to midnight, our show will automatically stream live through that or through our own website right on our own chat page. That should eliminate all problems. When you come onto the website, once we get the website going, people will be getting an email, and it'll be giving them, I believe what I was told, it's going to be sending you an access code to get in, because you'll have to log in. So anybody who's already registered, their information is going to be brought over to the new site, into the new database, and we will kick out a email. And the email will tell you where to go, I think it'll give you a temporary, follow the instructions, I'm not sure exactly, but I think it's going to give you a temporary username and password or a password. Probably your name will be the username. I'll talk with techs about this. Maybe I'll see what I do with it. You know, maybe the name, username should be your first name and your state combined. That might be, or your county or something. We'll see what we'll do. But anyway, username and password, you'll get in and you'll be able to change those things. The nice thing about it is you'll have a lot more control on your personal options. Someone who didn't check, for instance, to be a coordinator wants to be a coordinator, they can go into their settings and they can change themselves over or vice versa. So we're going to have a lot of different things on that. People will be able to visit the site, and those who are not logged in, if they don't sign up and they're not logged in, and logging in means and registered to become a jurist. So they will see everything on the site except for one tab. It's called the jurist tab. That will be a private tab. And all the information under that will be only for members. But everything else on the site they will be able to see. They'll be able to come into the live stream room. They'll be able to watch the chat. But they won't be able to comment in the chat unless they are signed in. Almost every page you'll be able to you know, put comments and leave information and so on. And I just want to spend a few more minutes talking about this, on what we put together and some of the ideas. I talked with someone recently this weekend, and matter of fact, it was a recorded conversation, so I cut and pasted it. It'll be up on the new website. I don't know if we have it on the old one. I don't recall whether I put it up or not, but we are putting it up on the new one, which talks about some people were thinking of getting their own state web page. And we want to try to really kind of stay together in a national group, get to know each other from state to state. And once we all go off on different websites, it's going to divide us to some degree. And people will be going to the site that you train them to go to, and then they'll not look at the national. We have all this information on the national site, and it's critical that people follow the program we're laying out. Of course, there's a lot of room for making your own decisions. Being grassroots, you need to make your own decisions. But as far as the framework, everybody's got to follow the framework. If they go off on another way, it's the wrong way. It's that simple. There's either a right way or the wrong way. So it's important that people come to these meetings on Monday nights, or they at least listen in. If they can't make it to these meetings, they can listen to it off of the stream pod, whatever they call that. Each one of these programs are recorded, so people can go back, and we try to give them a title. Tonight's title is going to be the King's Bench, I think, and a few things. But once Hagen's done, we're going to talk a little bit about the King's Bench, and then we're going to open the lines for conversations. But a couple of things I just want to go through, and next week we'll get into more detail. I believe by next Monday our website will probably be up and going, and people will be come right into the room, come right into the text chat area, and it'll be streaming live automatically, and it'll be a lot easier. There should be no more problems. There'll be a phone number up on the top of the page, on the bottom of the page. Anybody who wants to ask a question, they only have to dial in, and they can ask their questions. If you're on the phone, you can listen on the phone, so obviously you'll want to mute your computer while you're on the phone so we don't get that feedback. We're going to create a position for one national coordinator, okay? And right now, I'm going to ask Gerard if he wants to take that position. At some point, once we are established throughout the country, then that position will be something voted on by the state coordinators. There'll be 50 state coordinators, and they will vote on who they want to be the national coordinator. But until that time comes, I'm going to ask Gerard if he wants to take that position. And, of course, if he wants to keep that position and he asks the state coordinators to vote for him, then you guys vote for him. If you like him, if you don't like him, kick him out. What do we care? But anyway, all the states, every state should have one coordinator. Now, this is extremely important. If you are in a state without a state coordinator, you need to get one. Now, I've been sick this past week, and I've been under a lot of pressure for other things. I had some personal problems the past 2 weeks and just a lot of things, so I haven't been able to pay a lot of attention. Also, I've been working on building a website, which has taken a huge amount of my time. But I think we got three states or more that have sent in for state coordinators that I haven't gotten them up there yet, but I will get to them, and I will put them up there. We have a lot of states where we don't have state coordinators. And that state, until you get a coordinator, you're going to lose out. Someone just takes the job temporarily. They could pass it to someone else later. But you need to have a state coordinator because the state coordinator is going to have the controls and the power on the website. One of the things we're doing is we're creating state areas. Each state will have, I think it's set up for 5 pages. Hang on a minute. Let me click on this button. Okay, yeah. On the state pages, every state page, you'll be able to click on the state page on the top of the page and on the bar, and you'll choose your state, whatever it is, and each state will have their own area. And the only people that will be able to post in that area or do any work in that area are the people that come from that state. So it's going to be like a private group. But anybody in any state can go into anybody else's state area and look and read and see what's going on there, but they can't post. They won't be able to do anything particularly, which they will be able to do in the national, and they will be able to do in their own state area. But each state area is going to have their own message board. You're going to have a place to upload files. Now, we have to be careful because we've got 3,141 counties, and obviously, we can't give 3,141 people the ability to upload files. I mean, we'd be totally uploaded and probably duplicated and everything. So what we're going to do is each state coordinator will have the ability to upload files. So if someone from a county has a file they'd like to get uploaded, as long as it applies to the state, you know, then they'll upload it. And this way, nothing will be duplicated. Obviously, we would need the state constitution up there. You'd want the state laws as far as the election law is concerned, and whatever other information you think is important. You don't need to post anything national like the Constitution or the Bill of Rights or anything, because that's already up on the national end. So we don't want to duplicate anything. So anything for the state, you'd upload those files. So you have a place to upload files, and the county, the state coordinator will do that. We'll have a page there, Find the Law for Your State. We found RSS streams on law for most of the states. I think there was about six states we haven't been able to find, but we'll continue to look and get those six states up there. But we got them for most states already. So every state will have a page where you'll be able to go to and find the law, what's going on, what you can look up, your statutes, you can look up Supreme Court rulings in your state, and so on and so forth. You'll also have the same thing on the national end to look up the U.S. Supreme Court rulings. You'll also have a blog page, and that page is whatever people want to write stories and papers, and then, you know, you post it out, and the next date you do another one, and so on and so forth, just like a blog. That'll be, that authority will be given to the state coordinator, and if they want to for a while, they can post stories or post information on those pages, and if they're a blogger, they can blog, and if not, they can find a blogger, and they'll be able to give that blogger the authority to be able to post on that state, the permissions. Every state, the last one will be a calendar. So you'll want to look at your calendar at least once a week, see what's going on in your state, if there's anything you want to attend to. We suggest to every state, one, the state coordinator should probably do this, or they can appoint someone else. Anyone could do it, I guess. However you want to work it out, you guys got to work it out in your state. But you should come together and work it out. But everyone should have one meetup group, one state meetup group. We suggest that you call it the National Liberty Alliance, and put in there, not national, I mean your state Liberty Alliance. That's what we suggest. You can do whatever you want, but I'm trying to keep things uniform. And, you know, when people see the uniformity, especially the enemy, they'll know we're in numbers and that we got power, and that'll make them more nervous. So I suggest you put your state, if it's Montana, it's Montana Liberty Alliance, and so on and so forth. And on your front page, you can say that you're working together with the National Liberty Alliance. Whatever you want to do, you write it up and you figure it out. And all the county coordinators should come together to talk about and discuss different things, and you should be, you know, put things up there that are important. We have the national meetup, of course, and anybody who's not aware of that, on the top of our page, people should know this by now, but on the top right side, you'll see Join Our National Meetup. If you haven't joined it, you should. And that ties into our calendar on the meetup site, which sends out information and details, and we've got a lot of files up there and so on and so forth. It's a good calendar system with reminders, so I like that, and we're probably going to keep that. Also, it's another way to bring people into the system. People will join those groups, and they'll come in through Meetup, and that's how they'll find us. So it's good to have your own state to have a Meetup group. You'll find new people coming in that way, too. Excuse me. Anyway, just to quickly go through it, the state coordinator will have the ability to appoint two state co-coordinators whose name will show up on the state page. They'll have a lot of email ability. They can do mass emails. I'm not going to go through all this. I think next week when it's up and going, we'll do it, and people will be able to go out to the site and look at it as we're doing it. You'll be able to be in the room, and you'll be able to open it up again, I guess, in the second tab. And you can look at all these pages and see what's going on. We'll go through the details. There'll be one national coordinator. There'll be 50 state coordinators with a lot of power and a lot of ability, total control over your state area. You guys do whatever you want with it. That state coordinator is controlled by all the county organizers, or the, shall I say, really administrators, which we're creating an administrators page, and we'll talk about that next week too. So those state coordinators will be able to get two coordinators, co-coordinators. We're going to have county administrators. They'll have a little bit of authority. We'll have a county organizer. They'll have a certain, very little authority. Also, there'll be a blogger with some authorities, and then the basic member, okay? And then visitors. Visitors can come in and go through the whole site, but they won't be able to get to the jurist page unless they become a jurist. Other than that, they'll have access to everything else and be able to listen in, and they can't comment. I mentioned that earlier. Okay, with that, we will get into more detail. It's really exciting, I think, this website. We got a lot of stuff on it. It's going to be very interactive. It's going to be put together much more logically than the other website. You're going to see it's going to be very convenient and easy to get around. You'll be able to see things. We'll have a search bar. We already have the search bar button built up on it, and that's, you know, so we're getting ready to rock and roll on it. Okay, with that, let me see if I can get to Hagen Smith. Gerard, can you connect Hagen Smith up? Hagen Smith is going to talk to us about Florida. Okay. Let me see. I think I just have to click his mic. Let me click his mic. All right, I got him. Hagen, are you there?
I'm here.
How you doing, Hagen? Okay, Hagen Smith is down in Florida. He's been working out in Pennsylvania, and he's been working now in Florida. He kind of lives in both places, but Florida is going to be, I think, his main place he's moving down to. He can explain that better than I can. But Hagen has some things to share with us about Florida. Hagen, go right ahead. You got the mic, as long as you need.
All right. Thank you, John. Hopefully I don't get feedback here. I'm not used to this, working on a phone and the computer both. But I want to start off by
thanking... You sound good,
by
the way. We're not hearing any feedback, but go right ahead.
Okay, thank you. I want to thank especially Roger Dowdell, who's helping me tremendously down here in Florida, and I'd like to name a couple more names before I get into what's happening. Patrick Cranwell, who is the Marion County coordinator, who travels with me to all these places and keeps me awake while we're traveling, a tremendous asset and a friend of mine. Roger Dowdell, John Chimber, Joaquin DiMoretta, which I'll be talking about him a little bit later, Chris Hopkins, Mark Schmitter, and there's a total of 37 counties in Florida that are either already elected or moving toward the election. There's seven already elected that I know of for sure, and there will be four more by the 5th of January. Actually, there'll be six more by the 5th of January because there's two on the 28th of this month in the Panhandle. Walton County and Santa Rosa County, and we're moving toward a bunch more. Also on the 27th, I have a meeting with three counties from the Tea Parties, Sewanee County and Columbia County, as well as Bradford County, and there's some other ones, other contacts, that I'm trying to set up a meeting on that trip as well. But in the south of the state, about from the Hillsborough line straight across and south. Roger Dowdell is helping me tremendously. That is a long ways from my place, and that is quite an asset, and I so thank him for that. And not that others aren't helping, because they are. But now back to the counties that are elected. We have two counties, Marion County and St. John County. We have filed our papers into the court clerk. Now, and I'll do Marion County first. We got our papers filed into the court clerk after a little bit of controversy where the clerk took our papers, turned them over to his attorney. His attorney sent the papers back to us with a letter full of lies and deception with the intent to mislead us that I guess he thought I was a fool. I don't know. But he quickly found out because I responded back with a letter that John, I believe, may have in his mail by now because I hard mailed it to him. But hopefully he'll put that up online so everyone can see it. What I did was I charged him with about seven felonies and warned him that I would prosecute him in his private capacity if I find out that he's made copies of these papers and that one of the felonies was he had no business with them. But anyhow, then the clerk, I had sent him a letter as well, and he sent back the papers, he sent back an email and said, Mr. Smith, I have filed your papers as you commanded, and there will be no fees for filing those papers. So then we subsequently went to St. John's County and went to the courthouse and found out that they had done the same thing. They had put his papers into the hands of an attorney, and were proceeding the same direction. So we warned them while we were there that we were investigative administrators for the common law grand jury in that county, and that we'd be looking into why the clerk is doing these things, and that we would proceed accordingly. And they kind of got scared about that, and the deputy court clerk was very friendly with us by the time we left there, and we went up and actually looked at some courtrooms that they claimed to use for the federal grand juries. We explained to them that that's not acceptable for what we need. We need our own rooms with the proper equipment to facilitate the common law grand jury, and that we would need a office and a meeting room for the investigators. So it looks like that we may well get to the right person to get that done. But back here in Marin County now, I have contacted the person who assigns the court space, and they're telling me that he's on a cruise and he cannot respond to his emails or the phone calls, but they will pass that along to him when he's back off of his cruise, that he will be giving me a call. So I'm going to try a friendly approach, as I always do, to get that grand jury room, and I hope to be the first one in this country to actually get it. So we'll see what happens. And I'm looking here. And one of the biggest questions that we're encountering from people in these elections, as well as other things, is where is the authority? And John Darish, I think, appropriately answered that question, and he has it online on, I believe it's the Jurist Documents and Services. And if you click on that file and go down, and this is for anyone listening, go down in that file, there's a grand jury enforcement link that you click on, and it takes you to that. And this is basically what I answered in the last election, but the people who were asking that question wasn't satisfied with the answers. So I encourage everyone to go on there. It has step-by-step 1 through 7 to answer these questions. And then it gives some court documents at the bottom of there on the proceeding, which verifies what he has said here, as well as the USC's. So anyone wanting to know the answer to that enforcement should take a look at this, because there's no simple answer. But that's where we're at in Florida. We're moving much more rapid than I ever thought we would, thanks to Roger Dalzell's help. And I look forward to Florida being fully elected in all 67 counties by July 1st, but it looks like we very well may exceed that to about the end of April. So I'm looking forward to it, and I thank you for allowing me time to update everyone. And John, if you would update the site to give us 7 counties elected, I would sure appreciate that, and I'll keep you posted on the new ones. With that, that's about all I have.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. I'll leave you unmuted for a few minutes if you want to pipe in. Yeah, that paper we wrote up, which gives you the authorities, I mean, by what authority and the actually to be able to oh, goodness, what was the name of that paper? Let me go up there real quick and take a look. It was called Enforcement, Grand Jury Enforcement.
Grand Jury Enforcement.
Right. Now, it's very important to realize there is a procedure for this. And long, 100, 200 years ago, laws were put in place to maintain this procedure and the process. Every court system in the United States, no matter what level it is, even in E.C. Prius courts, they have a certain procedure of how things work and how papers are filed. And it's the same thing in every court. If you go to New York, the filing is the same system as if you'd go to Montana or Texas. If you go to the federal courts, it's the same procedures. Everything is the same, the process, the procedures, everything. And the law that's required to file these things. And so if you read through those papers, it'll give you the steps of how things go and what the authorities and the powers and the enforcement actually is. Now, criminals would do criminal things, and you know, really people have been brainwashed and they're lost, and they're listening to what the authorities, what they think are the authorities, are telling them. You know, for instance, the county clerk, the chief court clerk up here in Greene County, okay, they said, well, you know, I'm just listening to what Judge Prudente is saying. I said, well, and Judge Prudente is the one that we, one of the four judges that we indicted. And I says, well, you're listening to someone who's a criminal. They've been indicted. They're no longer in that office. Now, they made their criminals, and no one's taken control over this because she seems to have a lot of authority, but we're going to get her out of that office sooner or later. It's only going to be a matter of time. And, you know, in Nuremberg, you're just following orders. No, you need to be following the Constitution. You have an oath. Now, it turns out that this clerk did not take an oath. This clerk does not have any legal background at all. So she doesn't know process, procedures, or nothing. So she's just listening to her boss. And but all these clerks, they're supposed to be at minimum paralegal. They're supposed to take an oath. And the oath, and I could see why they'd like to not have those people as paralegal and also not have them to take an oath, because then they'll just follow the orders and go along because they don't know any better. But if they took that oath, they would understand and know that they have a duty. And they have a duty to file these papers. And they can't be tribunal to the papers. No judge, nobody else can tell them. What they have to do is file the papers and let the court deal with it. And the judge is supposed to sign the paper. He's a magistrate. And he doesn't have the judicial power, the tribunal power to remove it anyway. He's got to just sign it and move it along the process. This is procedure. This is process. This is the way it's been working for 200 years. If they don't like it, they can argue it in court, okay, during the case. But that's the way it works. And anybody who violates that, go ahead, Hagen.
Can you elaborate a little bit on statutory authority, because that's something these people are going to be met with. I've been met with it every time I went in a courthouse before a clerk of court and so forth. They're claiming there's no statutory authority for filing these papers. There's no statutory authority for the common law grand jury and so forth. And I know the answer to that, but would you elaborate on it, please?
Well, whatever they have in statutes as far as what we as the grand jury could do is irrelevant, because we don't operate by statutes. We operate by the will of the people, and the will of the people has been enumerated in the Bill of Rights concerning the grand jury and the Fifth Amendment. So it doesn't matter what statute they might write. But I'm not aware of any place anywhere in the country where it actually says that we, the people, cannot form our own grand jury and come into power and do what we have to do. What you will find in different states or in the constitutions of different states is the process by which the court might choose or call for a grand jury. And since the people aren't doing their job, they had to do something, so they set people up in the courthouse to make the phone calls to get people to come down to become jurors, maybe to be grand jury or trial jury. So all of that process is in there. But, you know, even though that process is in there, that doesn't change us. And also that has turned to become a corporate thing. That's for the corporation, the corporate state, the corporate county. It has nothing to do with the Constitution and the trust and the government that we've established. Now, they've taken control and moved everything into a corporation. But there is U.S. codes. The clerk is forced to file the presentment as required under penalty of law, U.S. Code 18-2076. And there's also, turns out, there's New York State codes also that requires the clerk to file. When a paper is given, they don't have the authority to reject it, deny it, look at it. They just have to file it. That's what they have to do. They can do nothing else. And there's also law that talks about anyone who tries to remove it from the file. Okay? For instance, I think it... let's see, to the executor, if any clerk interferes, they shall be fined or imprisoned 3 years or both under U.S. Code 18, subsection 2071. So they can't hide the paperwork, they can't bury it, they can't remove it, they can't destroy it. If they do those things, they're facing 3 years in jail. And there is a code put in specially for the judge. This is code 18 U.S. subsection 1512B. This is the code. It's a requirement if a judge intimidates a clerk or to destroy or conceal an official proceeding, this is an official proceeding, he shall be fined or imprisoned not more than 20 years or both under that U.S. code. It's 18 subsection 1512B. So we have the laws, and it's a matter of executing it. And since they don't want to execute their laws, we're going to execute their laws. I think I mentioned this last week. We're going to be doing a mandamus. We've finished our investigation. We're going to talk about that next week, about our investigation, what we've done, where we're at, and how we're going forward with this. But the bottom line is we're sending out a mandamus. And the mandamus is going to tell these people, for the final thing, we command you. We're going to put out a pretty in-depth mandamus. We're going to teach these people what the law is. And if they refuse to read it, or they deny themselves to read it, then they're going to do it to their own destruction. Because if they do not answer to the letter, both the clerk and the judge, then they're going to be indicted. The grand jury has come together and has agreed on this. So we're going to lay this out for them. Now, after those days go by, they got 5 days to do it. Then we go back up and we're going to see who's in charge and make sure these people have been removed from office. If they haven't been, then we're going to take all of our information. We're going to go down to the sheriff's department. We're going to do affidavits, witnesses to the breaking of laws. So there'll be at least three of them, maybe more, affidavits, sworn affidavit, that's an affidavit of sworn, that the law was broken, who broke it. And then we're going to show them the laws and what the requirement is. And that sheriff is now obligated because he sees a law being broken. We swore, we're the people, we swore that we saw that law being broken, and we're charging them. He's got to go arrest them. He's got to fingerprint them. They got to be brought in for indictment. I'm sure they'll be let go. They'll let loose on their own recognizance, and things will go forward. And that's how it'll happen. And if the sheriff doesn't do his job, then we go to the next person. And then we will have another. We have another judge coming into Greene County. We're going to pressure him in January, and we're going to indict him too if he doesn't want to go forward. We're going to get this forward. We'll just keep going through that process of indicting, and getting arrest, and push this process through till the pressure builds up. Now. We've been avoiding going national. I've been invited on a national radio program, and I haven't really done. I did make the phone call back to them. They called me back. I got to get back to them now. But we've ignored it because our website was not ready. It'll be ready by next week, we believe. Next Monday we will be live, probably before that. We'll send out emails to let everybody know. And when we go live on that, then we know that we'll be able to handle whatever comes out from these national radio calls because we find that this issue is very popular within those who are looking for an answer. Whenever we do a show anywhere, we get a lot of new recruit people coming in and registering. We did one big one. I think it was the Drake. Well, it was the Drake show. He probably has a pretty big audience because that particular day we had 120 some odd people sign up, 130 somewhere around there that day. And we had over 2,000 hits that day. So that's pretty big. We've been averaging about 500 to 1,000 hits a day, sometimes 300, and sometimes it peaks up. It goes up and down. But, we get quite a few hits a day. Our ranking is really building up. We got a lot of people, thousands of people across the country involved with us. And when we get into this national thing, it's going to go really big. I think at that point, the press won't be able to ignore us too much longer after that. And once the press gets involved, and as long as the indictments are going forward and the people are getting involved, now they're going to have to do something. That's where the game's going to be. That's game on. So that's the plan and the program, and that's how we will get enforcement. We will get it. We have some other things we could do, but we don't want to talk about that as we move along. We just don't want to get into other enforcement possibilities. First, we want to see how this goes forward, and then we'll move into another step. So we've got a lot of things we could do, and there's different papers we can write and so on. Hagen, anything else before I put you back on hold?
Yeah, well, one final thing. What you mentioned about the commandment, with this clerk of court here in Marion County refusing to file those papers, that's exactly what I did to him in that letter. I told him, I'm not requesting that you do this. I'm commanding you to do it. And if you refuse to do it, I will be forced to bring charges against you in your private capacity. That's what put him on notice. And I think that attorney, after getting the letter he did, recognized that I was willing to go ahead and prosecute both of them, if necessary, to get this done. So he changed his tune. He became less arrogant and more friendly and is operating with us, whether he means it or not, friendly now. So once those people realize that you're not joking around, you know, this is a serious matter, you're not going to play with them, I think that you will find them much more receptive to filing your papers. And now you can use Marion County. I have the certified copy that we got today right in front of me here. And if you want copies of it, just give me a phone call at my phone number, 352.
Yeah, but you could just send me a copy, because I'd like a copy of that.
Okay,
as soon as
I'll
I get the papers that you mail to me, I'll post them online. They may be here on my desk. I see a lot of stuff on my desk. I've been sick and busy, and I haven't even opened my mail in the past 4 or 5 days or so. But I'll get to that. Let me ask you a question. I got a mute button here on my Skype. I'm coughing a lot. Are you hearing me cough, or am I getting it muted out?
Well, it's not bothering me if you are.
Okay, but you haven't heard me cough. I muted it. I just hope the mute's working. So.
I heard you a couple times, but it doesn't.
Yeah, a couple times I did miss it. So.
Yep. Okay, that's all, John. Thank you, and I'll listen in to everyone else.
Okay, thanks, Hagen.
You bet.
All right, so anyway, we'll get more into enforcement and talking about that and the details of what's going on in New York. Like I said, New York, we're going to be doing a mandamus. That's our next move. A mandamus is coming from the King's Bench, from the people. We, the people, are the King's Bench. You know, some people were talking about doing a board of review, and they're confused on the purpose or the meaning or what a board of review is. A board of review is a group of people pulled together by a higher authority to investigate a situation. That's what a board of review is. I've studied some, I went back looking to see what I could find on a board of review, and the furthest back I could find anything on a board of review, I think was in the 60s or maybe the 50s, I think it was the 60s, and where the first time they came in and talking about it in a legal sense, and it doesn't come up in any of the legal dictionaries, so you can't find them in any of them. Even going back to the second edition of Blacks, I couldn't find it there. Broviers, I couldn't find it there. I couldn't find it anywhere. But I did find something on that back in, I believe, the very early 60s, 61, where the Department of Labor had a conflict with an employer. And the employer said he wasn't liable for something or whatever it was. And they said, yeah, he is. And they said, well, there's no rules. And they said, well, okay, fine. We can't find no rules, but you're liable anyway. He denied it, blah, 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 blah. So what they did is they created a board of review. And they paneled four people, six people, whatever it was. I don't know. And they went out and investigated the situation. And, of course, the government enforcing themselves, choosing their own people, you know what the answer was going to be. The guy's going to be liable. And so the Board of Review comes back with their thoughts, and this is the way it is, and the guy, they held the guy liable. Okay? Now, I don't know how they worked out in the courts, if he took to the courts. I didn't follow the story. I wasn't interested. I just want to know about the Board of Review. And I saw at least four different cases where the Labor Department put forward a board of review, and there's numerous other different places. I know Gerard mentioned some experience with a board of review as a council within the town put together and send a board of review out on a mission to find out answers and investigate and come back with a conclusion and a suggestion and so on and so forth. As far as the grand jury is concerned, the closest thing to a board of review would be the administrators. We're teaching people, everyone, to do four administrators. And we would be the board of review for the grand jury. We would be sent out to investigate situations on behalf of the people for the grand jury. We would discover whether a law would be broken, and we would give them a prescription to fix it, or we would take it before the grand jury. And we would be able to arbitrate these problems and settle them, and if we can't, then we send it to the grand jury. And then, of course, we produce the case to the grand jury, and that's how it works. So you see, a lot of the process, a lot of the power is in the four individuals, because they're going to settle a lot of problems so they don't have to go to court. If you can settle a problem without sending to court, why not? Unless it's a violent action, you should be able to settle almost anything. I mean, no matter what it is, you should be able to settle it. Grand juries should not be interested sending people to prison. They should be interested in restoring the injured party. That's what common law is all about. It's looking for what's called justice. And if you can restore the injured party without having to go to trial and the person's willing to accept the responsibility and pay the consequence, which is to restore them, however that is. I don't know. It could be all kinds of things, but they've got to jump through the hoops that you lay out, and they're willing to do it. Both parties are willing to go for it. Then you don't have to send them to trial. If either of the parties denies the arbitration and denies the solution, and you can't negotiate it out, well, you send it to the trial jury, and they will decide. They'll be the finale, and that'll be that. But in any event, the main thing is the Board of Review. If you can look at these four individuals, as a matter of fact, I think we should start calling them a Board of Review for. They're the administrators of the grand jury, and if you had to explain things further, they're a Board of Review sent out under the authority of the grand jury to investigate. They are the people on behalf of the people. And the will that we're there to bring forward is the will of the people. And that is defined, clearly defined, in our Constitution. We, the people, did establish and ordain this Constitution for the United States of America. And so the will of the people, particularly that we're most interested in, actually two things, what the government should be doing and shouldn't be doing. What the government can do is listed very clearly in the Constitution. What the government can't do, a Bill of Rights or a Bill of Prohibition, you can call it either or, that's what they can't do. And that defines that don't tread on us, okay? The Second Amendment gives us the right to have and to carry a weapon, if that's what we decide to do, a firearm. That's none of the government's business. We have the right to travel. We have the right of free speech, all those things. That's what the grand jury is to. We are representing the king of the people, we the people. So we're going to represent the Bill of Rights. We're going to represent the whole Constitution. And as much as it's within the will of the people, particularly within, a problem to the main Constitution, we will also uphold the state Constitution. But if it's repugnant to the rights of the people, if it's repugnant to the Constitution, then it's null and void. That's the Supremacy Clause. It's written into the Constitution. Every state that came into the Union agrees to it, and that's that. We'll get into more of those details later at another time, but I'd like to real quickly go through a paper which is called Extraordinary Remedies. Right. Anyway, Extraordinary Remedies. And you can find this on our document page. It's the Jurist document page. And when you open it up, it's entitled The King's Bench. And that is the key. People must understand that the jury is the King's Bench. When the grand jury is impaneled, when they become impaneled, that's when the Supreme Court opens. There is no Supreme Court or common law court until the grand jury comes into power. That's the first order of business. The grand jury has to open it up. It can't be opened by anyone else. There's no judge that can open it up. There is no prosecutor that can open it up. What they can do is call for the grand jury. The people have the right and the authority to impanel that grand jury. And the moment of impanelment is the moment of that the court is opened. Now, the court is opened when the grand jury comes together. And if they decide to indict, then it remains open and it's been delivered into the hands of the trial jury. You know, both sides are in the courts going through the process. The judge, which is a magistrate and only a magistrate, he's the traffic cop in the court, makes sure as things move along that both sides get the information shared back and forth, both the prosecutor up against the defendant. They exchange all the information. They go through the process of preparing for the court. That could take a year, could take 6 months. And that's what the judge is supposed to be doing. He's supposed to be called the justice, by the way. But he's not to throw the case out. He can't form summary judgment. He can't say, I'm dismissing this case. He can't do any of those things. Only the jury can throw the case out. Only the grand jury. If they came to a decision during that process in time, they can come back to the grand jury and that grand jury that was originally called can be re-impaneled again to be brought up to the, and brought before them, that they're willing to settle the outside of going in, or they can bring it to the four. That's probably where it would go. Go to the four administrators. And then they would look at the contract that they agreed upon, and they're willing to forfeit the trial and move on. And it has nothing to do with the prosecutor. It has to do with the injured party and the defendant. The prosecutor may want to continue the prosecution, but if the injured party wants to settle it and the defendant is willing to accept the settlement, to heck with the prosecutor. He's only hired help. He doesn't have authority. He has no say whatsoever in this thing. So then the four can go in, the contract could be made up, and then they can execute it, and you don't have to go to trial. But if it goes to trial, then the trial court gets it. But the key thing is whenever the jury is in session, whether it be grand jury or trial jury, then the king's bench is open, and that's the authority, and the court is open. In the Latin, I know I'm going to really bastardize this, but it's coram ipso regi. That seems to be the Latin, coram ipso regi, which means before the king himself. So when those four individuals start the process, ultimately they're representing the king himself. And when the grand jury opens up, that is the king himself, because they are the people. They are 25 people chosen out from the people to come to deal with the king's business. So before the king himself, and the old name was the Court of the King's Bench. Anybody who wants a copy of this can go up to nationallibertyalliance.org, click on Documents and Services, and then click on the article that says Extraordinary Remedies, and then you'll be able to read along and take a look at this. We read here that the people of this state, as the successors of its former sovereign, are entitled to all the rights which formerly belonged to the king by his prerogative. And this is a Supreme Court ruling, Lansing versus Smith. As a matter of fact, no, it's a New York Supreme Court ruling, as a matter of fact. And that was done in 1928. And what took place in the 1800s, 1828, I hope I said 1828, took place in 1828. It's very important to watch what was going on in the 1800s in New York, because it affects the entire country. Here's where the battle was to get rid of the grand jury. This is where it took place, and this is where the evil worked its evil here in New York. And they lost. They think they claim they won. The lawyers have been lied to think that they won, because they're trained that way, because that's what communists do. You know, the Bar Association is a communist organization. They control all the lawyers, and therefore they control everything in our government, because they have lawyers everywhere. So they teach people in school that this has been done away with. Nothing could be further from the truth. I researched this in history, and what I found out in 1938, when it came to a head in 1938, and the Nazis were marching in New York City, Carnegie Hall, they were having meetings, Nazis having meetings in Carnegie Hall, the thousands of them, okay, and they were trying to destroy, at the same time in 1938, they were trying to destroy the grand jury. They got a convention going here in New York, which was a constitutional convention, and they came together to get rid of the grand jury, and the people did nothing but strengthen it. They lost. We won. It was reconfirmed in 1949. It was reconfirmed again in the 60s, and is reconfirmed most recently in 2001 here in New York. They're liars. They are liars. We have a paper on this. Let me see if I can recall the name of the paper. There are actually a couple of papers. There was one that I learned a lot of history from. We put it up there. Let's see. Where is this? All right, this would be also on the documents page. Okay, same place where the other paper was. And it's about 1, 2, 3. The fourth one down is Grand Jury Under Attack. This is a paper written in 1955. And so the history up to 1950s or 55 is what I got out of this paper. And then I did some further investigation. But this is a very good paper. I think it's about 38 pages, 40 pages. And then I wrote a paper to extend it to bring it up to present time. I think it's only about 4 pages. I kind of did a synopsis, and it was working on the information concerning the jury and the fact that these people are liars. Without the jury, there can be no liberty. Right underneath it, that's a paper that I wrote. And that's the history. That's the way it really is. And anything they're telling you in the newspapers, these professors of law, they're liars, straight from the belly of the bar. We can put a four-letter word there, too, but we'll call it the bar, straight from the belly of the bar. And that's what communists do, lie. They turn things around. You know, Ron Paul had a statement, he had a saying, he said, truth is tyranny in the empire of lies. And that is true. And anything that is truth, they're coming out after those who are bringing truth. They're liars. And we're going to call them on it. And when we write our mandamus, we're going to make it clear the power of the king's bench, that is the grand jury, and make it clear that the grand jury never has ever been done away with. And clearly in New York State Constitution, Article 1, subsection 6, I believe it is, it says it right there that it will never be done away with. Ever. That's in New York. The battle took place in New York. A few other states, but in the 1800s, it took place in New York. And remember, a lot of the states out west, they hadn't been developed yet. They were just coming into being. So this battle was taking place before all the states came into the Union. So it's very important to understand what happened here in New York. Also, we have the Supremacy Clause in the U.S. Constitution. They have no authority to create an act or anything to do away with the common law. Common law, you can't without looking into common law, you can't understand the Constitution or the Bill of Rights. They are common law documents. You can't make heads or tails unless you look at common law, because they're common law documents. And obviously the Fifth Amendment gives the right and the authority of the people to have a grand jury. It puts it right into an unalienable right there. Didn't put it in the body of the Constitution. It put it in the Bill of Rights, Fifth Amendment, and that's where it's at. So it's an unalienable right, and they can't cancel out nature. You know, common law is natural law. It comes straight from God. You can't cancel out God. You can't cancel out nature. They seem to think they can, because that's what communists and Nazis do. They try to bring their own will. The bench, in Black's Law Dictionary. In Black's Law Dictionary, in Latin, the word bancus, which is the bench, means the tribunal. That's very important to understand. The bench is the tribunal. The tribunal is the sovereign of the court. The sovereign of the court is either the grand jury or the trial jury. And if someone sues someone in court, and you are the sovereign and you understand how things works, and the other side, the defendant, and if they have a bar lawyer and they're brain dead and they don't know enough to call for a jury, and you bring your case into the court before the magistrate and you get to the end of the case, guess who gets to decide which way the case is going to go? It's the plaintiff, because he is the sovereign of the court. As a matter of fact, this is how the IRS wins all their cases. Maybe we'll talk about that in the future. But that's how the IRS wins their cases. In U.S. Code 26, they say that the tax court is a court of record. A court of record brings in the tribunal. And that's where that stranger is that's sitting over in by the prosecutor that nobody knows who he is and he won't answer who he is. If you're in court in one of those things, you'll find that stranger sitting over there, and he's there to represent the will of the sovereign, which they claim is the IRS, which is a corporation and can't be. But we can talk about that another time. So the King's Bench in Black's Law, the Supreme Court of Common Law in England, being so called because the king used formerly to sit there in person, the style of the court being coam ispo regi. And that's the meaning of the King's Bench. The King's Bench is the Supreme Court of Common Law. That's the King's Bench. If there is no King's Bench in the courtroom, it is a statutory court. They have no authority over you. They have no jurisdiction over you. It is not a common law court, and they got to shut the case down if you demand it, because you're not going to give the will, your will, over to their will. They're the servants. And why would you want to submit to their statutes and their statutory system? Coram nobis, Black's Law, means before us, ourselves, or the king, or the queen's bench. It's applied to writs of error directed to another branch of the same court, from the full bench to the court at nisi prius. So if it's a nisi prius court, the king's bench makes a rule, shuts it right down. That's why the grand jury, and this is extremely important to understand this, when we get empowered, the grand jury has the power of habeas corpus. If the grand jury writes a writ of habeas corpus and sends it down to a Supreme Court, which is a nisi prius court, a court that had acted under statutes and not law, okay, and you pull someone out of prison before them, they have the power to release them. Now, we'll talk about that later, and this is something you don't want to abuse, but this is the kind of power we're talking about. When a writ is put out from the king's bench, it must be obeyed. Years ago, it was the sheriff worked directly for the king. Well, who does the sheriff work for? Works for the king. He works for the people. The people are the king. He's to do the will of the people, and he's to obey the will of the people. And if the grand jury puts forth an order to the sheriff, he must obey. But the grand jury will never do it directly. They do it through the court system. They send it off to the judge, and the judge signs it, and he sends it off to the Supreme Court. But, of course, that's not the way it's working right now. Okay? It's because the juries are puppet juries. The king, the judge does follow the will of the grand jury, unless sometimes they'll redo a case, they'll call a mistrial. He doesn't have the authority to do that. He needs to go to jail for anybody who does that. But of course, they got puppet juries, puppet grand juries, puppet trial juries. They do the will of the government because they tell them what to do, and they don't know any better because we're all dumb. We have to and that's why we have to get educated. If people expect to be ignorant and free, forget about it. Forget about it. Okay. Let's see what else we want to look at in here. The tribunal is the seat of a judge, the place where he administers justice. By this term, it is no more usually understood. The whole body of judges, it's the jury. That's the tribunal. It's the jury who composes a jurisdiction. Sometimes it is taken for the jurisdiction which they exercise. So the whole body of judges is the seat of the judge, is the tribunal. That's the jury. It's not that magistrate, that guy in the black cape up there on his throne up there. That's not the tribunal. He's not the judge. They call him a judge, but he's not a judge. He should have been called justice. That's what they used to call him, justices. Justices are those who reflect the will of the king and brings forth justice. A court of record, acts and judicial proceedings are enrolled or recorded for perpetual memory and testimony. It proceeds according to the course of common law. Court of record is the course of common law. Common law is the courts that we the people have ordained and the courts that we expect to have. Proceeds according to the common law, has the power to fine or imprison for contempt. And we're about ready to do that, by the way. We're getting ready to imprison for contempt some of these people. If we have to bring the sheriff in and fine him and imprison him for contempt for not obeying the grand jury, we'll do so. We'll go down to his undersheriff and we'll have him obey the Constitution and arrest the sheriff now. Whatever has to be done, we're going to be working this out in New York. This is our next step. This is where we're pushing forward towards. And we may have to do a lot of indictments before it finally happens. Let's see. Proceeds according to the common law, has the power to fine or imprison for contempt, possesses a seal. We have the seals. Its judicial tribunal has attributes and exercising functioning independently of the person of the magistrate, independently of the judge, which is generally, who is designed generally to hold it. The decision of a superior court may only be challenged in a court of appeal. The decision of an inferior court are subject to collateral attack. In other words, in a superior court, one may sue an inferior court directly rather than resort to the appeal to an appellate court. Decision of a court of record may not be appealed. Let me repeat that. A decision, a common law court has no appealing. You cannot appeal a common law decision. When the jury makes the decision, it is final, period. It cannot be questioned. It cannot be appealed. Now, there's always an exception to every rule. If it's shown that that jury violated another person's unalienable rights, the U.S. Supreme Court and probably the New York Supreme Court probably would have the authority to hear that and bring it back in. And for the final decision, they'd have to pull another jury, though, see, because they really don't have the authority to do the full act on that, although the U.S. Supreme Court can. Only if someone's unalienable rights was trampled upon by that jury in some way. Of course, there could be an appeal if all of a sudden some evidence surfaced that, hey, wait a second, here's some proof that this person didn't do it. They aren't the guilty party. Well, justice requires it to be opened and relooked at, of course. So those are the exceptions to the rule. But generally speaking, a court of record may not be appealed. It is binding on all courts. Okay, all courts. Anyway, I hope my coughs aren't coming over the air. I'm hitting that mute button. We read on, the judgment of a court of record whose jurisdiction is final is as conclusive. This is the U.S. Supreme Court, the case of Shenecloth versus Bustamante. It's a 1973 case. And again, it's in this paper called The Extraordinary Remedies. You can go up and read it for yourself on nationallibertyalliance.org under Juris Documents, Documents and Services. They went on to say, the judgment of a court of record whose jurisdiction is final is as conclusive on all the world as the judgment of this court would be. It is as conclusive on this court as it is on other courts. In other words, it overrules the United States Supreme Court. The grand jury, the trial jury, overrules even that court. Because why? Because it is the people exercising their authority in the process of law. It puts an end to the inquiry concerning the facts by deciding it. Inferior courts are those whose jurisdiction is limited and special and whose proceedings are not according to the course of common law. Criminal courts proceed according to statutory law. Jurisdiction and procedure is defined by statutes. Likewise, civil courts, admiralty courts, proceed according to statutory law. Any court proceeding according to statutory law is not a court of record, which proceeds only according to common law. Those courts are inferior courts. Now, if you don't understand what this is saying, you know, it can be a little difficult if you're hearing it for the first time. You should go back and reread this over and over until you understand it, because this is so powerful. That means these criminal courts, when we went up to Albany and we were fighting on the gun battle of trying to get the Second Amendment back here in New York State, that case is still ongoing, by the way, but in any event, we were battling up there and we were arguing before the court, and the judge says, well, I'd like to give you what you're asking for, but I have no statute to tell me. The statute say I must do this. Now, when he said that back in those days, we didn't pick up on that yet. Today, we would have slaughtered that judge on that statement. He's operating by statutes? Wait a second. This is common law. We opened up a court of record. We are the people. We came in as the tribunal against the state. What are you talking about? See, we didn't know enough back then, but we know now. And this makes it very clear. It puts an end to all inquiry concerning the facts by deciding it. We proceed according to common law, not according to statutes. And if you're in a court that is operating according to the statutes, that tells you it's not a court of record, it's not a common law court, they have no jurisdiction over you, and they have to shut this case down. And, of course, if you're the plaintiff, then you want to make that point, then Maybe we'll talk about those legal and judicial positions we could take in court someday, but I don't think we want to go into it now. Let's see. Power of a court of record. A court of record has power to punish, by definition, to punish by fine and imprisonment, or either a neglect or violation of duty, or other misconduct by which the right of a, or remedy of a party to a civil action or special proceeding pending in the court may be defeated, impaired, impeded, or prejudiced in any of the following cases: an attorney, a counselor, a clerk, a sheriff, a coroner, or other person in any manner duly selected or appointed to perform the judicial or ministerial services for a misbehavior of his office or trust, or for willful neglect or violation of duty therein, for the disobedience to the lawful mandate of the court. We're doing a mandamus. That's a mandate coming from the court, from the king's bench, from the people themselves. If they willfully neglect or violate the duty thereon, or disobedient to a lawful mandate of the court, or of a judge thereof, or of an officer authorized to perform the duties of such a judge, in other words, given the authority through the grand jury or the trial jury, or officer authorized to perform the duties, or a judge, an inferior magistrate or a judge or an officer of an inferior court for proceeding contrary to law. All these people, the grand jury and even the trial jury, has the power to go after them for contempt of court, and they have the power to fine them and imprison them for contempt of court. All right, I'm not going to go through too much more of this. Let me just quickly run through here to see if there's anything else we should read. here's some Supreme Court rulings, okay? Sovereignty itself is, of course, not subject to law, for it is the author and source of law. But in our system, while sovereign powers are delegated to agencies of government, sovereignty itself remains with the people, by whom and for whom all government exists and acts. And the law is the definition and limitation of their power. Wick Woe versus Hopkins. A consequence of this prerogative is the legal ambiguity of the king, his magistrate, in the eye of the law, is always present in all courts. Though he cannot personally distribute justice, his judges are the mirror by which the king's image is reflected. So, when the grand jury comes to a conclusion, or a trial jury comes to the conclusion, the paperwork is sent to the judge. And the judge is to get his John Hancock on it, because he has no choice but to sign it for the will. He is the administrator of the court. He has to sign it. He was there administrating the court. He heard the decision of the court. He listened to everything. He heard the will of the people, and he now has to sign the paper that orders whatever it is that the jury decided to do. Okay? This is process. This is procedure. This is the way it works. This is real law. Right now, we're in nisi prius courts, and we have to turn them back to common law courts. And the way they took it over is they took over the education of the lawyers and the judges. No judge becomes a judge today unless they're bar approved, right from the belly of the bar approved. All lawyers are bar approved. If they break the rules and start acting, they tattletale on each other, just like we do in our country. We tattletale on each other. We tell, if we're an employer, we tell the government, oh, he made so many dollars this year. You know, they've trained us to rat on each other. Power to indemnify all that, to get rid of it. And so we have to stop doing these things. But the bottom line here, what we're talking about, is that these law schools have been training these lawyers to do the will of the New World Order, to bring everything into statutory courts. And that's how they took everything over. They control the judges. They control the lawyers. They teach them that statutes are law, and that when they come out and you make an argument, you bring common law, they're taught in law school that that common law is passe. That doesn't exist in America. No, we got rid of that a long time ago. Well, I guess they got rid of your Bill of Rights, didn't they? I guess they got rid of the Constitution. Hey, maybe that's why they don't listen to that paper anymore. But anyway, we have nullification powers. People have nullification powers. It's just time to say no. And we start off right now. We'll get some power through the grand jury, through the juries, and it's time to say no. Enough is enough. This country needs to come back to the way of the people, the will of the people. And, of course, the will of the people, by God's mercy, has got to be the will of natural law, which is the will of God. And if there's any other way we take it, God will curse us for it. All right, there's quite a bit other in this paper, a lot of other lines in here you should read, paragraphs and conclusions. Well, let me read the conclusion. The King's Bench is the seat of the tribunal. That is the judge, the real judge, for the Supreme Court of Common Law. That's the court of record. Made up of one or more sovereigns with the power to fine or imprison for contempt and functions independently of the person of the magistrate. That's that judge, the guy with the black robe. Therefore, the King's Bench can only be the jury, whether it's grand or petite, or the sovereign of the court. Whenever the King's Bench is impaneled by the people, a court of record is open, whether it is in its investigative role, the grand jury, or in its trial mode, which is the trial jury. Its authority, power, judgments, and jurisdiction is final. It cannot be challenged or overturned. All courts not of record, without the King's Bench, that is, no jury, no people, no sovereign, are inferior courts. Town courts, inferior courts. Unfortunately, all the Supreme Courts of New York State, inferior courts. They're statutory courts, nisi prius. They're not courts of record. They have no authority over you, none whatsoever, as long as you do not consent and reject them. They don't have jurisdiction. Let me see where I was. Its authority, power, judgments, and jurisdiction is final, cannot be challenged or overturned. All courts not of record without the King's Bench, that is, are inferior courts whose jurisdiction is limited and special and proceeding according I hope I'm catching these coughs. Anyway, proceeding according to statutory law. Jurisdiction and procedure is defined by statutes. Likewise, civil courts, admiralty courts proceed according to the statutory law. Any court proceeding according to statutory law is not a court of record, which only proceeds according to the common law. It's an inferior court. And that's the bottom line. On this paper, we go through a lot of these extraordinary remedies. We talk about the writ of mandamus. These are extraordinary writs issued by a superior court. These emanate from the King's Bench. When you go back into history and you follow back the history of these extraordinary writs, they're called extraordinary writs is because it emanates out from the King's Bench, from the people themselves, from the grand jury, from the trial jury. That's where they emanate from. That's the King's Bench. And there are lots of writs. There's writs of prohibition. There's a mandamus, which we're going to talk more about maybe next week because we're going to be filing that. We're going to be sending out that mandamus. There's a quo vanto. We spoke a little bit about that. We've already done a quo vanto. There's a writ of error, which we may use sometime soon. There's habeas corpus, which, again, we may use very soon. And there's different kinds of habeas corpuses that we discuss in this paper. And so if you're not learning, if you're in this doing what we're doing and you're working to get a grand jury going and to bring justice back to America again, and it begins by bringing it to your hometown, to your county, to your courthouse that controls your county, that's where you need to be bringing this. And if that's what you're willing to do, to work with us to do that, and you're doing that, and you're stepping up, but if you're not re-educating yourself, you're doing a disservice to yourself, to your children, to your neighbors, to all Americans, because we need to become educated. Again, Thomas Jefferson said, if a people expect to be ignorant and free, they expect what never was and never will be. We have to become re-educated. We put together National Liberty Alliance for that purpose, to educate people. When we unveil our new website coming within the next week or so, when we open that up, everybody will get an email if you're on our email list. You get on our email list by joining the meetup group or registering with our website. Either way, you'll get on the email group list. And then you will get information letting you know when we've opened the new website up. And this website is going to be far better for educating, much clearer, much specific. We're going to talk about this next week, and we're going to show you where you got to look and what everybody needs to know. And we got to know, we can't be intellectually lazy. We can't be spiritually lazy. We can't pick up authority and power and get lost in ego and not do the right thing. We have to do the right thing. We have to be humble. We have to act in justice, with mercy, and in honor. And if you're going to be honorable, you got to learn. That's why these Monday calls are very important. And if you can't make them, of course, you know, listen to them over on the recording. It's right on the website. But it's so important to come to these meetings, find out what's going on. We also reveal our mistakes as much as we do reveal the process and the procedure. If we make a mistake, we reveal that. We don't want you to make the mistake that we might make. And we can direct people to the answers to their questions and take it from there. All right. Anyway, that's it for the evening for that. Let's now go to calls. We'll open up the calls. And by the way, we have to close down exactly at midnight. This on Blog Talk Radio, the way it works is it starts precisely at 9. We can't stop before. And it ends precisely at midnight. We can't go 1 second over. Okay, so that's where we end it. We're going to end. It's 3 hours, so when it comes to midnight, we'll kind of warn people that we're coming to the end. But let's go to first caller, please. Well, before I go to another caller, let me bring Hagen back on the line. Hagen, do you have anything else you might want to respond to, a question or comment about anything I said?
Can you hear me?
I can hear you, Hagen. Go right ahead.
Yeah, I mean, just an appeal to those county coordinators, state coordinators, to do everything that you can to make this happen. You know, I'm working hard, but I'm not the only one, and I know there's a lot of people that are. But, you know, just step up and give it a little extra effort, and, you know, the sacrifice that you make is so valuable to your own freedom as well as your family. So if I can appeal to anyone, please don't let them take this country away from us. Protect your freedom and protect this country. God graced this country once, and I believe he's divinely blessing us again. So I appeal to you. Go out there and work hard, and let's make this happen.
All right. Thank you, Hagen. And if you want to talk some more, you can raise your hand again. Let's go to the next caller. Hang on 1 second. Gerard, are you there? Maybe you can figure out how to take their hands down now that they've talked, if they want to talk again, so that they'll raise their hand again, the question mark, I guess. If you can figure that out, maybe you can take Hagen's hand down. Let me go to Carol. Is that Carol from Missouri? Go right ahead, Carol. Carol, are you there? 111?
Carol from Michigan, you mean?
Michigan, M-I, I'm sorry. Michigan. See, what do I know? I don't have all those two-letter things figured out yet. So I'll get it right on the next person because they're from Michigan also. But go ahead, Carol.
Oh, okay. I didn't want to say anything, but this was a great meeting tonight.
Okay. All right, if that's it, I'll move on to the next caller.
Okay.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Sheru, S-H-E-R-R-U, from Michigan. Your mic is open.
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead. You got the mic.
Oh, okay. You touched base on confirming everything that my common sense was implementing within the numerous court cases that I've been involved with, and the last two have been deplorable. But as far as the court of record, they were not. It was a lower statutory. But what I did do, and they do have me on a probation with this case, with one of the two. But I waived my inalienable rights to a statutory jury trial. Now, what I want to do is to prove the perpetrating of their fraud to such a degree that they actually went to that degree within the statutory to prove their criminality is I want to appeal them on a common law record, a court of record, with my unalienable rights. So am I going along the correct lines? But I'm going to need some help on this because I did
You're absolutely correct. You know, everything that they done was done by fraud. The fact that they brought you into a court claiming it, it's the Supreme Court or the Court of Commons or something that's bringing forth the, you know, constitutional court was a lie and fraud. The fact that they claimed that there was a grand jury involved, if there was, or a trial jury, if there was involved, and claiming that they're coming from the people and that was a lie and fraud. Everything is a lie and fraud. And therefore, once you discover that it's a lie and fraud, and once you discover your unalienable right and you've woken up to that, at any given time, you can take that back into the courts. Now, they're going to bark and complain about that, and they'll do everything they can to keep that out. And it may be almost impossible to get that done in today's courts. You might be able to get through it if you really know the law and can really, you know, articulate yourself both on paper and in person. You might be able to get through it. You're going to have to put the judge's flesh on the line, and you have to know how to do that. In other words, you in the paperwork, you pretty much threaten him in a nice way. You know, you let him know, well, you know, if you want to do this, you're going to do that. This is what's going to have to happen to you. And then you have to have the guts to take that guy off and put him into the defendant's list and sue him so they don't have to get another judge to deal with you. But once we move into the courts system where the grand jury finally gets back and brings all courts, the common law courts, which is the only court that can run in a Supreme Court building. Let me repeat that. The only court that can run in a constitutional court building is a common law court, a court of record. That's it. Anything other than that is a fraud. That's true, I know, in New York State, because the New York State says all Supreme Courts in New York State are courts of record. All county courts are courts of record. And they've deceived us. They've lied, they've robbed us, and they're all acting under Nisi Prius courts as Nisi Prius courts, statutory courts under statutes. And that's a lie straight from the bar. And so when we reestablish this, you will get your court of record. You will take this case back if you want to. You will get through it. If they give you a hard time, you just got to yell out to the grand jury. We're going to have a directory on our new website, which we'll talk about that next week. And the directory will list a special phone number for each and every grand jury elected throughout the entire United States. So anybody from anywhere will be able to come to our website, click on their state, click on their county, and they'll find the phone number to the grand jury of their county. They'll be able to make that phone call and get a live voice on the other end who will actually listen to their problems and work the situation out with them. And that's what you would do if they give you a problem in court once we bring them back to common law.
Okay, well, that is where I'm at. I am over a year of this happening, this torture happening, but what I'm finding out also, and I want, this is just information implementing and seeking, but I am making an appeal to help. I mean, I'm at the point where I want to get involved with like a think tank, but physically, I don't care if it's 24 hours a day, a grouping of people somewhere in the United States of America. But my point being is I have experienced where somehow these cases have been following me around. They're interstate crossing the lines with the police and justices from other states, and they're following people around. It's not just within a particular county or a particular state or wherever you have a case that's involved. If they want to go after people that are implementing common law, they are, like right now, I'll give you for instance, legally tagged all this wonderful stuff of lawful according to the system. No points, no driving record, that's bad, no nothing. On the day home, driving this car stopped at a gas station, you know, with a paper tag. So, I mean, they're getting people on statutory stuff without even breaking the law. So if an honest person of this country is not breaking a law, but they will statutorily rape and pillage you for no reason, but once they put your name into the system, whether it's for a case or a statutory stop or anything that they choose, even, for instance, parking lawfully on a road, if they put in question your plate or a tag or for any reason that they want to put you into the system, they will rape and pillage your automobile. They'll break into it. They are just running rampant. So what I'm saying is, no matter what we do, they can do whatever they want to us. So to counteract that and to put this case that I'm involved with as a precedented case, because it seems like a lot of people, I got a lot of hands in the pot that's going to cross, get involved with other people's cases because they've touched my life on so many levels. But I want to get physically involved with someone. I can't just do it a call once a week or once a month or a couple hours. I need to research this paperwork, get involved with someone who can just slap a bunch of laws on the table and just get involved with it. Start putting together some lawful language, because I have already done that, but it hasn't worked. So I want to
that person that you're looking for should be yourself. If you want, look at, everyone is capable of representing themselves in court. As long as someone believes that they can't possibly do it, then you'll never be able to do it. But the moment you decide to say, yes, I can do it, I just got to find out how. Just have some faith in yourself that you can do it. Law is not complex. It's pretty common. I think it was you that mentioned that everything I said was just made common sense. That's because it is common sense. It's common law. That's what common law is. It's common sense. Now, there are principles, and they're pretty easy to figure out. Look at, how hard is it to remember or think about the fact that we have to act with a sense of justice, a sense of honor, and a sense of mercy? That makes all the sense in the world. It's natural, it's correct, it's righteous, it's right, it's what God requires of us, and so on. So when you get into the principles, the two maxims that drive us, there are two maxims that drive the jury, okay? One of them is that in order for there to be a crime, there must be an injured party. No injured party, there is no crime. The state cannot be the injured party. That's common sense. Carrying a weapon doesn't injure a person unless I shoot them or I threaten them with it. Okay, other than that...
Okay, then another question would be, where would I acquire a support system to go down there without being alone? Because I can become very injured.
Well, I'm going to get to that. Let me just finish this off. The second principle that drives us is the idea, is the righteous requirement for every injury, there must be a remedy. You can't have an injured party and not bring them back to restore them to their original state of being. And who's got to do that but the person who injured them? And if the state injured them, the state's got to bring them back to their being, the original being. If they've been damaged, they got to pay the damages. And I'll tell you what, your unalienable rights taken away for one day, That's worth a lot of money. That's worth $25,000, $50,000, $5,000, whatever it is you say it's worth. I mean, you've got to be reasonable. You know, if you go to put in jail for a couple of days, that's pretty hard. Taking away someone's liberty for a couple of days or a couple of years, that's pretty, you know, that's a lot of damage. And the way we take a lot of
damage that they've done.
Huh?
That is the damage that they've done.
That is the damage. Now, how do you do this? How do you take care of it? Look at, let's go back to the same, you know, people say to me, you know, I talk about lawyers and that they're all low lives, they're, you know, this, that, and the other things. Well, Thomas Jefferson was a lawyer. Yeah, he was a lawyer, but he didn't belong to the Bar Association, nor did he go to their bar schools. Matter of fact, Thomas Jefferson was tutored and self-educated. He was tutored when he was young, and when he got older, he read all the time. He educated himself. We all should be doing that. We shouldn't be in front of our TVs. Let me tell you, it's a lot more enjoyable, I find, being on the computer, going through a lot of the stuff that we put together on our website. I've read a lot of this material. A lot of it I haven't read either, you know. I haven't been through all the Federalist Papers and a lot of the great works, the great books, the great thinkers. I haven't been through a lot of that stuff because time doesn't allow me, but I have an intention to get through them. Well, I'm going to darn well try doing it. Before my life ends, I want to read those books, okay? I read my Bible also. I want to read these things. I want to become educated. I want to understand. And all I have a strategy and a philosophy, and it's worked ever since I come to realize it. I never try to remember anything, just try to understand it. Memory will come all on its own. A child just tries to figure out what the heck it is you're saying until they finally understand the words, and then they respond, they send the words back to you. Next thing you know, they're talking. Well, they didn't have to work hard to remember it. They were just puzzling around, and what are you doing? What's this expression mean? Well, matter of fact, children know expressions right off the bat as soon as they're born, it seems. And maybe they understand a lot of the words maybe they've been hearing in the womb. I believe a lot of children have been hearing in the womb, and when you come out with certain words, they may not be able to speak them yet because they haven't worked out their vocal cords, but they may understand a lot more than we realize. You know, I don't know. But I know I talked to my babies when they were babies, and they looked at me as if they almost understood me, you know. And then the next thing you know, they spill out a word. Well, it's the same thing with this. Just get yourself drenched, immerge in it, and you will understand it. We have put a program together, and you'll see it'll be clear on the new website. You go to the Juris tab, learn everything in the Juris tab. That's minimum. That's minimum for everyone to know. And we have a law course. Everybody should be able to walk into a court, be able to write their own papers, and argue their own case, okay? If you believe that you can do that, you just got to figure out how to do it and learn it, then go do it and learn it, and you'll be able to do it. But no one can do your case better than you, okay? You can get counselors and help if you want, but you don't want to have to push your case because no one's going to believe more in your case than you. And no one could make a better case than you, okay? So we have a law course, lays out the anatomy of a law, of a law case, lays out the procedures, the process, the paperwork necessary. It's very logical. Their procedures and process is very good, by the way. It's logical, and you proceed according to the way that's been set up. As far as the law is concerned, okay, we have one page called Common Law. It's going to be on the new site as much as it is on the old site. Go start off in the Common Law. Watch those videos. There'll be some new videos up on the new one, I think. We have a lot of audios. Watch the audios. And we have some papers to read. Look to the documents in the Juris Documents page. That stuff, those papers are being put up there and written, and some of them have been written that I found that other people wrote, and I put them up there because this is the stuff that you should know. This is the stuff that will
give you... I've got another question.
And, well, let me just finish one other point. One other point on this. Work with a group in your county. If you got three other people that are going to do what you're going to do, if you're going to be administrators especially, and other people who aren't administrators, you should have a study group come together at least once a week and talk about things and study things and then go on your way studying more and then bring it back every week and coming and discussing these things because that's how you really learn. But go ahead.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I don't have that available to me.
Well, you got to build it.
Howell County.
How many administrators are there? How many county coordinators or organizers are there?
None.
Okay,
just
well,
me.
The first one, we're going to be getting more. When those people come in with interest, you need to be talking with them and maybe even talk to the people in the county over next to you. Okay? And then once you get every county we're going to allow one person, we'll call them the administrator of on our website. They'll have access to everybody in the state and all the phone numbers of everybody. And that one person could call these people up or can send them an email and ask them, hey, look, we're going to be doing a common law course together. And if you'd like to come meet with us, we're going to be doing it here or there or whatever. And you got to look for people. This is the beginning place. It all starts someplace. It's starting here for you.
Correct. Yeah, I know. And you've done quite a bit of organizing because quite a bit of the questions that I've been talking about over the last couple of years, I mean, you're starting to implement. So it is starting to come into the works. The way that I'm feeling right now is that even if I did do some paperwork into this court, I know that they would walk all over me and probably go against a violation of probation, and I would be away from a computer and having access to freedom.
You're absolutely right.
So before I even start wiggling the worm in front of the bait, which is a big darn fish, I need to have some type of enforcement of implementing a grand jury where they're not going to incarcerate me because I'm starting to implement what I know that's wrong.
I understand your problem. Here's where it starts. Work with the people, okay. The other coordinators or other counties. Ask them to help you as far as to establish something there. Look for new members when you have the election there, you know, to reinstate the common law grand jury in that county. When you have that, you'll get new people coming in there. We're going national shortly, you know, national radio, so we'll have new people coming in. You'll probably have people from your area coming in, plus from other sources. You know, we're trying to get people from everywhere to come in. You'll start meeting people, then you start working with people, discussions with them, getting things together. Some people will want to do things, some people won't. But just work together.
Is there a way to implement so people don't come up missing when they start initiating these cases where if you don't hear from this local coordinator or someone in their locale that they've implemented the cases or the different types of cases so that we can read how it's put together and things like that to cross-reference, you know, these kind of brainstorming ideas and
We have some examples in our free course. We wrote a book on how to access the courts. We also wrote a book, a handbook for courts, and it's very thick, that handbook for courts, but there's good indexes on how to get around that, and you can pull things out off the fly once you familiarize yourself with it. But we wrote a book on how to access the courts, how to paperwork, how to fill it out. We ourselves done lots and lots of court cases. And we used to have them up online. When we moved national, we took them down. We got to clean them up and put them back up. We got to, you know, take all the names of people out of it maybe. And we need to figure out how we're going to logically put them up. And once we put them up, you'll be able to go look at court cases that may be similar to yours, and you'll be able to utilize those as a framework. And once you learn common law and really get – one day it'll click, okay? If you immerse yourself in the tapes and the videos, there's MP3s and there's videos. There's also papers that we've written. Just immerse yourself into these things. Don't worry about how to figure it out.
I said, I'm so immersed, I'm puking in it. You know,
immerse yourself into these things. Listen, once you get yourself into them, you're going to get more questions. You're going to get more confused. So you're going to seek more answers, and you're going to listen to more tapes, you're going to read more papers, and all of a sudden, one day, I remember my son's first words, he just blouted, you know, he just spurted them out of his mouth, okay? Why? He had an epiphany. He figured it out, and it finally came out. Same thing with my daughter, okay? So it's the same thing with you and anything else. You'll have an epiphany if you keep working towards the goal, immersing yourself, and the more time you spend in it. I mean, when I started to get into this, I literally spend many hours a day, at least 4, 5, 6, 8 hours a day, every day. I'm just into it, listening to the tapes, watching the videos, reading the papers, going through the stuff, trying to figure things out, looking up court cases, and just immerse myself into it, and the next thing you know, it starts spilling out of my mouth. It'll work just the same with you. Just believe and do it. It'll work with anyone who believes and does it. If you don't believe, it's not going to happen. If you don't do it, it's not going to happen. So that's what you got to do.
Well, thank you.
We're here for Monday. We're here every Monday, and we always try to teach something. So here's another place where you learn. Listen to our tapes. We try to give them a title so it's reasonable of what's on that tape to give you some, so you can go and search to the subject matters you might want to look at first. Okay?
Okay. Thank you.
All right. It was good talking to you, Sherry. God bless you, and we'll talk to you soon.
Yep.
All right. Let's go to our next caller. Next caller is calling in from a 503 area code. You should have heard. You're unmuted now. Go right ahead, whoever you are, 668.
Hey, thanks, John. This is Oregon Tractors. How you been doing?
How you doing? Good to hear from you.
Oh, still alive, you know, with the controversy that they're still coming after me on.
Yeah.
But the one thing is we've all got to work together and start educating people how to file charges on these people, so that way when you put the common law courts together, the charges are written logically, responsibly, and so people understand how it's to be done. I mean, we got to, like you've been preaching, it is our responsibility. I know a lot of us woke up, you know, and started realizing what our parents did. And to clarify one thing, your birth certificate, either you own it or you don't. You're not a slave. And that birth certificate is a bond, and you could claim it, you know. But I just wanted to throw a couple things. I don't know if my other person has something to say, if they would like to say something here, but, you know.
Well, by the way, on that birth certificate thing, it is true what you're saying. It is a bond. You can make some claims. They're making claims all the time on it, and you don't even know about it. They've taken fiduciary authority of that. And when you go to court and you go to jail, they're using fiduciary authority on those monies, and they're drawing down on it. I heard something like it's worth, each one's worth, I don't know, $430 million apiece. I don't know if that's true, but it's some ridiculous number.
That is true. It depends on what area you grew up on, the investment bonds of the water and stock and the jail bonds they put together in the area you were born. So the area you were born with all the investments of the buildings and public buildings and the private corporation loans, that's all part of it under the Municipality Act. And you can look that up to educate yourself on EMMA. Type in EMMA and look at stocks and bonds, how they work. Because remember, this is how they are billing you for your service and your property taxes. And remember, property taxes is voluntary. Same with state and federal income tax. It's all voluntary. And I know I've proven that here on the West Coast, but they're still panicking, yelling, and screaming because they don't want to lose their benefit. And I don't have a problem with elected and public servants.
Well, I would just like to make one point about all this. Although it is being... fiction, okay? It is all fiction. All of that is a fiction.
Right.
And when the common law courts come into being, all of that bubble is going to burst, and the fraud's going to be revealed,
right.
And it's going to have no authority, no power, no nothing anymore.
House Resolution 192 of the 1933 Banking Act. We're supposed to be able to write off our water bills, our basic utility bills and everything by a signature because the de facto is bankrupt. So they owe us that for the investments they took. And so we're supposed to do that.
Bear in mind that whole bubble is going to burst when we bring common law back. That won't be available no more. And we don't want it anyway because the whole thing's a fraud. They're literally selling us offshore as cattle. That's what they're doing.
That. And they don't have the authority to do that. And the other point is that these senators and congressmen are personally liable for the debts, not you.
That's true. Yeah, because they're working for the corporation. Yeah. You know, I want to bring up one of the points someone brought up about the police and stuff earlier. Thank you. Someone brought up about the police and stuff earlier. Remember, if it's not the sheriff, they're corporate cops. They're not real cops. And people have got to realize that. When a cop gives you a ticket, that's a corporation giving you a ticket. That cop works for a corporation, the town of Washington, the town of Hyde Park, the town of whatever, the town of Poughkeepsie. They're working for a corporation. They're corporate cops, and they presume you're part of the game. And when a cop stops you, okay, he's looking to arrest you. He's looking for a reason to arrest you. Every time you get stopped by a cop, you have to realize that. He's looking for an opportunity to arrest you. You got any guns in the car? You don't have any contraband or anything? Do you mind if I take a look? You know, look at they're trained to come out and to find a criminality in you. And this is horrible stuff. But you know, I usually play along with them on the road. I'm polite to them, you know, because I don't want to upset them because you don't know what they're going to do. And I usually a lot of times I get you know, they tell me, go ahead, get out of here. I was stopped with speeding 70 miles in a 55-mile-an-hour zone, and the cop, I was talking with them, and I was going through my Wally, so I was a veteran, and we started talking a little bit, and he said, get out of here, slow down a little bit. You know, so you'd be nice to them. You can probably get off the hook of a lot of it. But if you're going to get the ticket, just take the ticket and go on your way. Don't give them the opportunity to find some more on you because they're going to dig and dig and dig. If you give them a hard time, he's going to get pissed, and they're going to start digging, and they'll find a reason. They'll arrest you for resisting arrest. I mean, they'll do anything, a lot of these guys. A lot of these guys are criminals. Remember that. They look for these people. But in any event, the bottom line on this is that you fight it in court. Don't fight it in the streets. That's the key. You know, we have a tape online on the common law. There's a guy was a deputy for the sheriff's department, and he's revealing what's really going on. It's quite a long tape. It's a couple hours long. It's well worth listening to. And got a lot of good information on how to beat these son of a guns, how to win in court, and, you know, how the process really works. So you got a lot of insight on what's really going on here and how to defeat them. But he does give you, he does train you into how to deal with a cop. And he does go forward towards the arguments. Unless you really articulated, don't make the argument, okay? You have to know this stuff in and out to make an argument on the street, okay? Take it to the court and learn that process. That could be all done by paperwork and just a few words. I object. You have no jurisdiction, and I don't give you any consent to deal with me. I need to leave this courtroom now. That's the only thing you have to say in court. And you do that long enough, believe me, they'll eventually get rid of you, usually, anyway. But okay, let me go to the next person in line here. I don't know if this is, are you, is this the next person, or is this the same person I was just on? Who's on 434?
That's me, John.
Okay, sorry.
Jim Cook.
Go ahead.
That's okay. Basically, I got this for you and Hagen. Hagen's been in touch with my sister down in Florida.
I know your sister. I talk with her often. Yep.
And we sent in the paperwork. I wrote the brief with all the court cases showing that it was a right to travel. And we got this assistant district attorney down there, a guy by the name of Hoffman in, Elmira, but it's really in Southport. It's a little courthouse. And basically, this guy isn't letting go. He's saying, we have to resolve this and yada, yada, yada. And she wrote, you know, on the paperwork, she did not agree to these proceedings, yada, yada, yada. But the thing is, we sent in the court briefs, and I doubt these people are even bothering to read it. I had two extensive court briefs that I wrote, especially on the right to travel, what traffic is, what the definition of motor vehicle is, so on and so forth. And, I mean, I had this locked up tight. And I told her just to tell them that she didn't want to contract, and basically she didn't agree to the proceedings according to what Hagen helped her to do. And this guy's, he's hanging on. So I think we should surprise him with a grand jury and get his butt into a bind as far as sending him to jail for what he's doing. Now, I feel like calling this guy and talking to him and telling him, oh, we're going to proceed with the grand jury, and either he lets her go or it's over with.
Well, look, first of all, you want to be careful. They'll call that a threat. We're coming in first order of business. I have cases in court. I have some cases that are personal that I really would love to get these judges on, but I set that aside. I've got cases that are personal and I've done for lots of other people. We have some court cases with thousands of people on our court case and I'd love to deal with what they've done in the court and the judges and everything else. And I talk to people who got all kinds of problems, people who've taken their children have been taken away, people in probate court, people in family court, horrible things. And but we have to keep our eye on the prize. If we don't save the republic, the court case is going to be irrelevant. You'll never really win it. So we have to keep an eye on the prize. The eye on the prize is really getting the republic back, and it starts in your county, in your courthouse. That's where it starts. You got to bring that back to justice and bring that prosecutor and the judge back to justice and bring the sheriff to understand what his job really is. We have to educate our sheriffs. When we come to them with the authority of the grand jury and we start educating them and we let them know in certain terms that, look at, if you don't want to understand this stuff and work this out, then you don't deserve being sheriff. If you see that he's happy or she's happy to really get involved with this, well, fine, you keep feeding them. But if they start to give you resistance, then they need to look for another job because they're doing the people a disservice. They need to understand the Constitution because that's what they are. They're a constitutional law enforcement agent. They represent the people. They're there to protect the people, not to intimidate the people. And violate the people. They're not to look at everybody like they're criminals. You know, when I was a kid growing up in New York City, I remember the cop on the beat. And the cop on the beat would walk down our street every day. We'd see him when we're outside playing, and he'd be strolling by, you know, spinning his stick and stuff. And he always stopped to talk with us. Always. He used to, we played stickball. He'd take up the bat and he'd hit a few balls or he'd catch a few balls and then he moved along his beat. He was our friend. And that's the way it should have been. That was when I was growing up in the Bronx, and that's the way it was. And there was a certain attitude, even though he wasn't a real cop because he was city. Well, actually, the city cop is a real cop, maybe, because, well, that's debatable. We don't want to think about that at the moment. The sheriff needs to control everything. But the bottom line is you don't have that. I think it was in the 70s when a lot of riots were breaking out, and they took the cop off the beat, and they put him in, there were cops being killed, and they put two of them in a car, and no more cops on the beat. It destroyed everything, and everybody is the enemy. The cops stop you. They want to know. They're looking at you as a criminal, not as a friend, not as someone that's in the neighborhood. You know, kids growing up, you know, you get to know the cop, and there's a relationship. You know, my father used to sit out in the stoops often, and the cops would come by. When a cop would walk by, and he'd always get a conversation going with him. The cop always took a minute or two, and then walked to the next and got another. He walked up and down the streets talking to people. And just doing things. It sounds like he really had a good job when you think about it, you know, just getting around and talking to people and hanging out to some degree. But that's the way it was where I came from in the Bronx when I was very young. I grew up in the 50s.
Back in those days, the cops used to say, well, he said, in those days it was real simple because you'd look around and if they were breaking one of the Ten Commandments, you know they were breaking the law.
Mm-hmm.
But nowadays, with all these statutes and all these things, you look at somebody cross-eyed, you're threatening them. You call a person a homosexual, the F word, and all of a sudden you find yourself in court for hate speech or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And those are all statutory laws that don't apply. But
right. Well, we shouldn't be doing those things anyway, but you're right. They don't apply. You're right. Well, you got to be careful because, you see, if you're in public, you could be a public nuisance. That's something that I think is a reality, and the grand jury is going to have to decide on that. You could be corrupting the morals of a minor. You could be creating a situation that could be dangerous to the community, you know, where you don't really maybe have an actual injured party, but the people are a potential injured party. So the grand jury's got to figure out how to deal with that and whether there was really a crime there. And in some of these cases, I think there is. Obviously, you don't want someone driving drunk down the streets, especially if you got your kids playing. You know, and then someone drunk driving by, that person has to be stopped. The cop has to take their keys away. Maybe not arrest them, but maybe they should give him some kind of a ticket that he's got to go talk to the grand jury, at least to the arbitrators, see what we're going to do with him. If he's got a real problem, is he drunk all the time? Does he drunk drive all the time? What's going on with this guy? You know, is he going to kill one of our children? Is he going to kill one of us? You know, it's hard to figure that out sometimes, but we have to figure it out. You know, maybe it was just a one-time incident, and it's not going to happen again. Maybe they should do 5 days of community service for that. I don't know. That's a people thing, a human thing, and you're going to have to look at the situation. Every situation is different, and the jury's going to have to figure something out on it, you know?
What I had really raised my hand for was, I don't know if it was Hagen or somebody else had said before, they were talking about... the IRS. The IRS is actually Puerto Rican Trust Number 62. It is not an agency of the U.S. government, neither is the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms. The IRS is a Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms agent who puts on a different hat. And they put all the money that they collect into the Federal Reserve, which is the private bank of the Rothschilds and the Rockefellers. It is a trust, and nobody can find out who owns it. But the bottom line to this, they can't win in court anymore. Basically, there's a lawyer, Lawrence Beecraft, down here in Alabama where I'm at, and he hasn't lost against the IRS. And the last person he protected was a lawyer by the name of Tom Cryer in 2005, and they won the case, and it came right out in the court.
I think that that's an error. I think that's an error. He has lost almost all his cases, but one, maybe two that I've heard of. I don't know if Carl's on the line, but if he is, Gerard, if you could find Carl, see if he's on the line somewhere, because he knows of a case following up on
case. He won the long case. He won the Tom Cryer case in 2005, and he won a case for a woman who was a FedEx pilot. This is all on court record.
Well, I'll have to look at that. I know that he won a case. I know he won one case particularly, and he might have won a Cryer case. And there may be a couple others, but there's been a lot of others that he hasn't won. And I know the one, I don't know the details on some of these cases, but I do know on one of the cases he won is because there was a trial jurist, who understood jury nullification and convinced the others that this is wrong. And they won that case, and he was the guy was acquitted. I'm trying to think of the name of the guy that was acquitted. But anyway, that guy was acquitted. I know there was a case in New York City. I know there was a New York case in New York City only about maybe 3 months ago. Matter of fact, Carl went down to hear that case, and I think he was down there also for when they decided, you know, what the penalty was going to be, and he lost that case. I know Carl spoke with him about a few things, and he didn't understand the common law precision. He acts as a lawyer. He's a lawyer, by the way. And if he does win, he wins by their rules. Unfortunately, most lawyers, they may not know all the rules that they play, and there are certain areas they're not allowed to go to. So I think a lot of the cases they'll win is because really they got to a jurist, so to speak, in the sense that they got them to they got a jurist who realizes nullification, and they got to that person, and that person convinced the others. So it's really hard to say on winning on an IRS case. The IRS should never win. The whole thing is fraud to begin with, and you're in you're lost at sea when you go to an IRS court. That's where you're at. You're at sea and you're lost.
Hold on
1 minute. Let Carl. Carl knows something. Go ahead. Bring Carl on.
Carl, you're there. Go ahead, Carl.
Yeah,
am I in error, or is it, maybe I'm in error and misunderstood, but maybe you could talk with him about Larry.
Larry Becraft, I've been following him for a while. Anybody who watched Freedom to Fascism, Aaron Russo's movie, would know a lot about that work. Tommy Cryer's work came later, and yeah, he's his own attorney, and he beat the IRS. I didn't even know until John mentioned that Larry Becraft defended him. But, Larry Becraft is an attorney. Last September was the David Gilmartin case, and I went there. I was able to watch a few hours. It was depressing, to say the least. He, like all attorneys, I mean, he's stripped of what he can say and can't say on behalf of David Gilmartin. Now, he testified. One of Larry Becraft's mistakes that I think, and others probably would agree, is he told David Gilmartin to not go before the grand jury and possibly incriminate himself further. I can't speak for all the other cases that he may or may not won, but I think most of them, I have to backtrack his history. I don't think he's doing that well after Joe Bannister and David. And by the way, Joe Bannister was there with defending Dave Gilmartin, as well as Larry Becraft. It was obviously an expensive case. David Gilmartin, as well as myself, we belong to Free Enterprise Society, and they have a legal defense fund that actually helps pay for these legal fees. There were several counts put on David Gilmartin. The jury overwhelmingly gave him a guilty plea, and actually a Free Enterprise Society wasn't even able to pay for all the counts. But sticking with, I'm still trying to figure out Larry Becraft. I think if you go to and do research, Larry Becraft and Bar Association, he thinks that anyone who says that the bar is related to the British Accredited Registry or any of that stuff, it's a bunch of baloney. So on one hand, he's for us and he's helping fight the cause and he wants to defend people. But in the other, he's not understanding the whole. I talked to him about common law, and he looked at me like I had two heads. He like what John said earlier, says that it doesn't exist. You can't do anything with it. And I don't know. I can't really.
Let me give you a little synopsis here. I belong to a group called Save a Patriot Fellowship. What you do is you write the IRS continually, and you tell them to show you where in the statute you're liable for the income tax. And what they'll do, and I know I've done this, what they'll do is they won't reply, they won't show you the statute because there is no statute. But what happens is they'll send it to another office someplace else in the country, and they'll send you a letter and tell you, well, you owe us X amount of taxes. Again, you ask them to show you where in the statute that you're liable for the income tax. Now, what happens is because they will not answer the question, you have right to legal remedy, and because they refuse to show you the statute, or they're avoiding the question. And in a court of law, the judge will usually rule for you because they haven't answered the question. So,
that's not necessarily true. If you're going to go into a court as a plaintiff, you're acting a lot off of what you're being told. And I could tell you, Carl will tell you right now, he's going through this. He's been in this for 5 years, is it, Carl?
Yeah, and very, very similar to Save a Patriot. I don't know the gentleman's name. I've been following the same procedures, and you're right. They respond back, and they give you, oh, well, here it is. And then you look at it, and you say, well, that's not it. It says if I'm liable. Well, that doesn't say I'm liable. It says if I'm liable. So you throw the questions back, and what they do is they send you letters saying, well, courts have determined that what you're saying is a frivolous argument, and we're not going to respond to you anymore, although it doesn't mean that we're giving up, but you still have to pay your taxes. And I guess, I don't know, what are you going to say, John?
The bottom line on this thing is this, is we've discovered the situation here. They get fiduciary control over you. You have to understand that, how they did it, how to get rid of it. And then they come and claim, but they have no proof of claim. And that's another thing. So if they don't have a proof of claim and they don't have fiduciary, and if you challenge that, because the judge is assuming they have fiduciary authority over you, and the judge is assuming that they have a proof of claim. Why is he presuming that? He's presuming that because they filed a paper in your county with the county clerk, which is called a notice of lien. Well, what's a notice of lien? It's not a lien. Well, that's what that is saying. If you understand, you got to realize what that is saying is we've already filed the claim in the federal court. That's what it's saying. And you got to go to the federal court and find, and what happens is they didn't file it. But by filing that notice of lien, it signals the judge to presume that they have fiduciary authority over you, to presume that they have a proof of claim, and since you don't know about any of those things, you don't challenge those things, you don't show and prove that they don't have either of those things, and you question, well, who gave you that fiduciary authority? I don't remember giving that to you. When did you get that? You see, if you don't know how to do that in court, then that's where the judge makes a presumption. He's presuming that there is a sworn statement on a proof of claim and a sworn statement or an affidavit in a court of law, unrebutted. I was looking for it. Unrebutted, it loses. If you don't rebut it, you're going to lose it. They win then.
Oh, yeah.
Okay?
Well, that's,
and, but you don't,
answer.
I'm telling you that you don't know about that. And Larry has never brought that up if he does know about that. I haven't heard anybody ever bring these things up, but that's the bottom line. And everything
and
else
the other
is a BS. It's all irrelevant. They're a court of record anyway.
Listen,
a guy
they proclaim the law in their court of record. Nobody ever challenges it. If they put you in a common law court of record, which they do often, the law is when they say willful failure to file, they just proclaim the law. It doesn't have to be written. Because they're going in as the sovereign, and people don't understand that either.
And that's the key.
Well,
one of the things that happened a lot in the David Gilmartin case and others is that they throw a lot of evidence away. So even though what you're saying is true, that you respond back, they have, and there's nothing Larry can do about it. The judge is at the discretion of what evidence she's going to permit in her court. you when you come in and you plead not guilty, you're at their mercy. I don't care how good your Save the Patriot program. Aaron Schiff is a perfect example of that, I think. He was not allowed to bring up the Constitution.
Plead to court and you just tell them you're not going to contract with them. But the whole thing
but
is
that's not
all
what Larry
theory.
Beecraft is teaching.
Yeah,
that's not what Larry Beecraft is.
And that's all theory, because everyone who pleads that case goes to jail or whatever it is they're going to get. Usually go to jail. If you go to court, you go to jail. Okay, you rest assured the end game is jail.
What if you do a UCC-1 filing? What if you do a UCC-1 filing and you claim everything in caps, which is your straw man?
They don't care. They don't care because they're criminals and they have fiduciary authority over you and they have a proof of claim that you didn't rebut, and that no matter what you do in that court, no matter what you say, you're not going to win unless you challenge those 2 points. If you understand how to challenge those 2 points.
Well, hey, listen, even Wesley Snipes got 3 of the 6 counts dropped. You know, getting into the details of that is interesting. New York Times obviously didn't, and most of the major news outlets didn't. But from what I understand, there's 3 that they dropped. He felt he wasn't really required to fill those returns out, and he didn't. He didn't sign anything. The 3 counts that they did come forward with were where he said he's not a resident of District of Columbia. He listened to somebody from years before, and it ended up getting him in trouble. But in your defense, if you're going to have a defense and you're going to stay on the defensive, I think a grand jury is key to trying to really moving forward with
an
it.
An educated
but,
grand
again, Larry
jury, yeah.
Beecraft is not – he told David not to go to a grand jury, and of course they went. Same thing with Joe Bannister, and Joe Bannister didn't even speak. He was just he just went by his book. You know, I don't know if you read Joe Bannister's book. It's about 95 pages. It's what he gave his boss.
Joe Bannister was a former IRS agent, and he defeated the IRS, too.
Probably because of his material and his research.
Yeah, what happened was that he happened to get someone, if you watch Freedom to Fascism, one of the jurists that was on his trial, she understood all this stuff, and she educated the other juries in nullification. And she explained, she says, there's really no law. They're beating this guy up. And she turned the whole jury. You see, one person with knowledge can turn the whole jury. She was lucky to have had her on that panel. If she wasn't on that panel, he would have went to jail. There's no doubt about it. And if you listen to the conversation and the argument on Freedom to Fascism, she talks about that. She turned that jury.
I own that. And plus, I've passed about 100 of them and passed them out to 100 people. So
we have
I
that up on our website, too, by the way. Good.
And I understand who they are and what they are. They are a trust, Puerto Rican Trust number 62. And they belong to the Federal Reserve. That's why all the money collected on the 1040
I want to tell you something. I understand what you're saying. You're absolutely right. But the judge is going to tell you to shut up. When I went into court, the judge threatened me with contempt if I continued down that path. Okay? Because I made that argument. I even had certified papers. I had a certified paper that showed that the IRS is a private corporation. They're contracted by the government to do a job, and that they are not government agents. I had that, and it was in my case. And when I brought that up, the judge silenced me. And when I tried to bring it up again, he warned me. He says, "If you continue going down there, I'm going to get you in contempt." I don't remember what it was contempt. What was it, Gerard? Do you remember what it was? He said, Gerard.
Was it contempt? It might have been contempt, or he threatened you, though.
He intimidated me. And I'm going to tell you right now, you got to understand, that judge is there to make 50 grand or more every time he puts someone in jail. He is out to put you in jail. Do you understand that? You got to realize that.
He said because you weren't an attorney, he was going to let your frivolous argument go. But if you were an attorney, you'd be disbarred and put in jail. That's what he said.
Okay. So now he intimidated me. Now I came back with a paper, and I dealt with it. And then my case is over. It's done. And I didn't go to jail. But I want to tell you something, but I sued them. I got them before they got me, and they pulled me into their courtroom, okay, the federal courts, because I did this in state, and then they pulled me into the federal court. But the bottom line is this. I want to tell you something. These guys are criminals. Well, if you listen to the tapes with Schiff, okay, when Schiff was arguing his case, the judge got so upset every time he brought up the Constitution, and he said, I told you not to bring that up in my courtroom again, and if you continue down that line, you're going to be found in contempt. He wouldn't permit him to talk about the Constitution. Okay? Why? Because it doesn't apply in that court. You're in a court of record controlled by the sovereign. The sovereign is the IRS. There's an individual sitting over next to the prosecutor who you don't know who he is, but he represents the IRS, and he's to make sure that the judge, which is part of the tribunal of the sovereign, which is the IRS, is going to find you guilty. Now, even though they bring in their puppet grand jury, they control them most of the time. Once in a while, they get a runaway grand jury, trial jury, but occasionally they get a runaway one, but mostly they get one who will do their will. Because at the end of the case, the judge is going to turn to the jury and say, now listen up, okay? You get to decide the facts, but I get the law is what I decide. And if this is A and B and C is true, and you'll find out they already admitted to A, B, and C, then you must find him guilty. So that's jury tampering ultimately, but that's a puppet jury, and they go in and they say, hey, he did do A, he did do B, he did do C. Well, we got to go guilty. And then they find them guilty. Now, I hear what you're saying, and what you're saying is absolutely right. I'm not arguing the point. I'm just saying it doesn't work in reality. Maybe let me change that. It doesn't work in fiction. Let's put it that way. Okay? It'll only work in a common law court, which is a reality. And when we get our common law courts back, which will be both in state and federal, and we talked about that. We'll talk about it again in the future, the federal side of it. When we get them back, that stuff won't stand up. When what you're saying right then and there is going to be it's going to be held up in court. Right now, you can't get it held up in court. Anybody who thinks they're going to fight the IRS with those positions are fooling themselves. I'm going to tell you right now, you're going to jail. I'll say that again. You're going to jail. If you're going to fight the IRS with those positions that they teach all over online, you're going to jail. And there's only one way to defeat them, and that's to challenge their fiduciary authority. And show me your proof of claim. Where's the proof of claim? Those are the two positions. And then you got to put the judge's flesh on the line to let him know in a very subtle way that you're looking for your remedy, and he better give it to you. And if you don't understand those positions, that's what you really got to learn. And then you got to hope you don't get that, because you could still lose that too, I think.
How'd you put him in jail? How did you get him?
Oh, because he couldn't go against his own rules. I just put him on notice in a very subtle way in my paperwork. And then I got a confession from the IRS, and they also turned around and they gave me a release of lien. But anyway, I'm not selling that stuff, and I don't want to teach it anyway, because they go after people who teach this stuff. So I don't even want to teach it. The thing is if you're going to battle the IRS, you better be real careful. I'll tell you what, if you can't figure you can beat them, you better make peace with them somehow. And I don't know how to do that, because they'll take all your money, and when they strip you dry, then they'll come and still put you in jail, because they're worse than the mafia. You never pay them off. You never pay them off. The penalties are so high, you have to be mega rich to be able to just get it paid off and get them away from you. You'll never get to that point. When they bleed you dry and they ain't got no more money to come out of you, now they're going to come put you in jail, because the judge is going to make 50 grand, the state is going to make who knows how much kind of money, probably millions of dollars off you for going to jail. They're going to pull the money out of your, what do they call that, trust? Carl, you still online? What do they call that? I forget the name of it. But anyway,
the trust.
Yeah, this SQ trust.
Which,
the money.
By the way, is all, if there's some more history on that. It may also be referred to as the Foreign Citizens Trust, and there's actually reference to that in 26 USC. But that's according to some materials that I'm reading.
Treasury account?
Huh?
What?
Is that the treasury account?
Yeah, that's ultimately your birth certificate. You're being traded on the market.
Yeah, that's your treasury account.
So.
Money
yeah, I believe so.
To your name. And you're supposed to send your birth certificate.
Right.
I haven't filled out a 1040 form since 1993, and I make six figures.
Well, you better not say that too loud online. Why look for jobs?
Well, no, you know, he's doing something right.
Well,
obviously, he doesn't. Nobody's sending 1099
to IRS. Here's what I did when I talked to the IRS. I called their office. I forget which branch it was. But I told them, and I knew it was being recorded, and I says, I'll tell you what. I says, if Mr. Rockefeller wants my money, you tell him to come and see me personally. Because all that money goes into Rockefeller's Federal Reserve Bank. And I put them on notice. And if I go to court, I'm going to subpoena him. And I'm going to subpoena the telephone records.
Right. Well, as long as you're confident, if you know the common law and you're confident and you understand how to put the judge's flesh on the line in the court, I guess you could be safe. If you don't know how to put the judge's flesh on the line, you better watch out because you're probably going to jail. And I don't want to be in federal court. I do everything to stay out of it. I've only been in it once, and I don't want to go back to it again. Because let me tell you, those guys know how to play chess, and they play hardball. But they are much more educated. If you can articulate yourself well, if you can put them in a box, if you can use their statutes against them, and then apply the common law and talk about the fact that he's not capable of giving you remedy, that this has to be returned to the state. And if you understand all those arguments and you make all those arguments, you have a chance of winning it. But if you don't know how to play that chess game with them, I'm going to tell you, he's going to put you in jail. That's where you're going to end up being if you're the defendant. And you got to become the plaintiff. If you're the defendant, you got to do a countersuit. You have to understand how that works. You got to challenge the authority of the court. You got to challenge the authority of the court. Ultimately, is the IRS claiming to be the plaintiff, and they're not the sovereign of the court, but they're claiming to be the sovereign of the court because the U.S. Title 26, I believe it is, or is it 28, Carl, that talks about that the all tax courts are a court of record. Is that 26 or is it in 28? Do you remember?
Well, here's something for you.
Yeah, it's all 26.
26.
Title 26 does not have any implementing regulations. Title 27,
it doesn't
which is
matter.
The
it doesn't matter. You're under corporate charter. They're under corporate charter. That doesn't matter to them. They don't go by the rules of the
Constitution.
Listen,
the gentleman, John, can I ask the gentleman?
He's right.
I know you said
but he's not going to win.
No, I know he's right. He's talking about the parallel table of authorities.
Yes.
Yes, that we understand that. We get it. I would defer to John is that they come in as a court of record or the sovereign, and I watched it with that David Gilmartin with Larry B. Kraft defending. He can't say nothing that the judge doesn't want him to say. He has to keep shut, as John said.
Well,
as John said, if he was an attorney, if John was an attorney, he would have him disbarred and put in jail. And the same thing with Larry B. Kraft. If he dare brings up all the stuff that he knows and he talks about, I guess, obviously behind the scenes, he doesn't seem to write about it on his website, which is another – he plays both sides. He wants to make money, just like the rest of us, right? He wants to – but let me ask you something. Is anyone sending 1099s or W-2s to the IRS on your behalf?
Oh, I don't know, and I don't care.
Well, then that's why you're safe.
That is the key. That is the key to being safe. No one's doing 1099s or sending you anything. You know, you're self-employed, and they're trying to find a way to get you. That's the problem with that. They've been after – well, I'm not going to talk about that. So, anyway, let's move on to the next person. We've been on a long time. We appreciate your call, and believe me, we agree with everything you're saying except for the reality you think that you got in those courts. They are criminals to the hilt.
Let me finish with this, John. The reality is there's two nukes floating around, and we ain't got time to do a lot of things. And the next false flag is coming up hot and heavy to get us involved in a war with Syria.
Right.
And Iraq, and we're looking at next spring. So all bets are off when that stuff goes down.
I agree. I've been saying that for a long time. We got to get moving now. We don't have time left. We got to get moving now. Anybody that's on this call right now, if you haven't gotten involved with us, it's time to go out to the website, nationallibertyalliance.org, read the front page, and watch the video on the front page if you haven't seen it. And I think you'll agree that this is the only solution, and join up and let's get active. Anybody that's in this game already and you're kind of active or semi-active, it's time to shut the TV off at night. It's time to bone up on common law and procedures and process. It's time to get together to help organize your county and get control, get the people back in control in your county, and let's get it going. We don't have much time left. We've been blessed to have a look at. I believe it should have happened in October. I'm absolutely convinced it was supposed to happen in October, but too many things went wrong. They got rid of six high rankers who refused to go along. They had a problem with Syria. They didn't get the war in Syria going, and there was other problems. And then so they pulled the plug on it, and they pushed it off to a later date. So, and I think spring is right. It could be earlier than that because the date for the dollar to collapse is, I think, February 26th. Now, they'll maybe push that away some more.
From what I heard, one of the generals took the nuke and blew it up off the
coast.
I'm not sure
whether that's true or not, but I heard those stories too, but I haven't had that confirmed. But we do know that they were gotten rid of because they refused to obey orders, and a lot of generals, a lot of high rankers have died and or have been thrown out over the past years. I think over 200 have been thrown out just in this guy, this dictator's term so far. So, all right, well, anyway, let's move on to the next caller. And if you want to talk again, we'll get you, you know, as we get around. There's a lot of other people with questions, okay?
Hey, John, thanks a lot.
All right, thank you. And we do appreciate your position. Don't think we're arguing against it, because you're absolutely right. The thing is the reality in these courtrooms, they're criminals. There's nothing more dangerous than ignorance in action, nothing more frightening than ignorance in action. That's what you get in the state courts. In the federal courts, they're a little more witty, but there is a lot of ignorance there, and it's frightening. All right, next caller. Don't know a number. It's coming up as 3-1s. You should have just heard. You've been unmuted. You got the mic. Hello?
Hello?
Yes.
Hello?
Yeah, you got the mic. Go right ahead.
It's me, right? I can go ahead?
Yes, you go.
Okay. John, this is Irina and John from
Brooklyn.
How
you doing? I recognize your voice. Good to hear from you.
Yes, thank you. For some reason, I was personally inserting that the juries and grand juries and that we are county organizers, even though we are extremely involved in our property extortion, in our murdering us and putting in jail and everything like that, we still wanted to put it out there because for the reason that people can call us, we can be the one who is collecting all the people, and maybe either our case will go that way that we could be involved more, or either somebody who is going to call us will be taking the leadership, that kind of stuff. And it's not there. It's simply not there. Somehow it disappeared.
The leadership?
No, the county organizers, our telephone and our names disappear from county organizers.
You mean on the website, your name disappeared?
And Liberty Alliance.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know why that would happen, but I'll see if I can fix it before next week. But bear in mind, most of my time is being put into the new website, which will be probably unveiled before the end of this week. Hopefully, it will be. And once that happens, when you get online and you sign in, you'll get an email. And this I don't know if I explained this early, but let me make this clear. Everyone that is signed in and registered right now, for the new website, when you come on, you will find that you have to log in, okay? Everyone is going to get an email that's already registered, and it's going to give you a username and password, a temporary one, to get into your account. Once you get in, you got to fix your username and password. Inside there, you will have the ability to toggle switch yourself as a county organizer or not, okay? If you're not a county organizer, then no one gets to see your name as far as publicly. But if you are a county organizer, then your first name will come up on the web, on the page for county organizers, and your phone number. It'll be your state, your county, your first name, and your phone number. And so we're not going to put the last name of the person because I don't think we should. Some people might feel intimidated about that because they're a little nervous about their name being there and so on and so forth. And look, at, we haven't got time to get frightened. That we ain't got time for that. We'll have plenty of time later for that. You don't have time right now, so don't get frightened. We got to get forward and do things. And if we don't do the things, then you better be frightened what's coming up, because what's coming up is Nazi Germany. What's coming up is the turn of the century for communism. Okay, that's what's coming up. So forget about getting frightened. We got time now to step up, and now is the time to go forward. And we can prevent Nazi Germany from coming to America. We can prevent communism from taking control of this country. Go ahead.
Yeah, John, I just noticed that only one person who ever called us, it was Corey. And at that time, somehow our telephone was out there. But since then, nobody called, but I don't see our phone out there. And
I will
totally
check
won-
it. I will check it when I get a chance tomorrow. And if it doesn't get fixed before the week is out, you'll be able to fix it yourself by going in and just pressing the button in your settings. You'll have settings when you log into the site, and you can click the button, stay logged in. So whenever you come to the site, you'll always be logged in. And then, you know, you'll be recognized by the site, and you'll have all the opportunities to do everything that everyone else can do on the site. Plus, you'll have your settings, and you can change things around and do whatever you want to do. You can comment on every page. You'll be able to text chat in the chat area. We'll have the national chat room open 24/7, and there's going to be a lot of activities and a lot of interaction between the people on the new site. It's going to be very rich. It's a very rich site.
I truly wanted to be there, not because of anything, but because we don't have people in Brooklyn, and we do need the people in Brooklyn.
We're going to work on that. Let me tell you what we got to do, okay? You got to find three more people. You got to find, you and your husband, and then there's Corey, and there's maybe get one other person, or maybe five people, but you get four or five people that are the core. Everyone else you'll pull when you need it. Your partners are really the people in the county next door. That's your real partners. Those are the people that you want to really partnership with. The few people that are going to – we only need four people per county. I want to make this clear to everybody. We only need four real serious people in each county. That's all we need. Everyone else gets into the jury pool. And if they want to be called often, we will call them often, okay? And if they can't, come in and do their duty when they're called because they're busy, that's fine. We'll re-rotate them back in. If they want to go on investigations with us, they're welcome. But there's going to be four people who will be really the administrators and do the work. It's full-time work. It's a paid position. And those are the people that will control the process. Now, the people on the juries are pulled out of a pool. The first pool we pull off of is our website, those people who want to be pulled in. After that, we then go into the voters registration. So, Gerard, are you still here? Gerard? Anyway, did you have another question?
Yes, I do. I do.
I've lost my mic.
Okay, hold on 1 minute. After I'm finished with this call, can you take the mic for 5 minutes? I got to go away for a few minutes.
All right.
Gerard?
Yes, go ahead.
Did you hear what I said?
Yeah, can
okay.
You hear me?
Yeah, you can use all the controls. Let me finish with this call, and you can take the next call. It's 807. I'm going right down the line. You see it?
Hang on, because I'll just get my mic back. 807.
Right. You see, right under the red light, the triple ones. The next call is 807. All right, anyway, go ahead. Finish up what you want to say.
Yeah, go ahead. I don't see 807, but go ahead.
Yes. John, I just wanted to tell you that on our case, there's no mercy. That's exactly what you're telling about. It's a fascism. You were telling about some kind of if you cops stop you, the policeman stops you, and you say something, you do something. We did not do anything.
I understand that. There are some circumstances that they're going to get you anyway because they're criminals.
Yes, but this is not it. I just wanted to tell people that they will know what's happening
right
to us. We simply just bought our house 15 years ago. We paid
Hold on 1 minute. Gerard, can you take this call? I'll be right back in 5 minutes.
Yeah, go ahead.
All right. Just go to the call under her when she's done, but I'll be back in a few minutes. Go ahead.
We had the police just racketeering our properties. They came to us to intimidate, to threat, to abuse, to harass, and to just we will give up, you know. And finally, they even attempt to put us in jail. We went to jail, actually, and we dismissed that case, but they were trying to frame us for 7 years. On the top of it, in the court system is beyond belief. It's what is happening. You could not believe. Just today, despite that we had in the past, judge was saying that based on oral arguments, he made decision based on 3 pages. It was over 1,000 pages submitted. That was not any oral argument because it was no hearing and no court date, nothing like that. And it was our renew in reconsideration with architect affidavits, attorneys, statements, and everything like that, because Department of Building permit 4 times to build on our property, to take our property over, to extend the property for newly bought adjoining lot. And this is, and we presented surveys, they were ignored. We presented our deed, it was ignored. So judge is simply stealing our property and giving that to the people who bought next to us, who are foreigners and who are demanding land from my husband, who is American-born. You know, this is beyond belief what is happening. And this is no possibility to protect ourselves. And just as today, suddenly we learned that from e-courts, not only the decisions appears on e-courts 10 months backwards, that we can't even make an appeal. They getting, like 10 months later, they appear on the e-court, and they were entered to the court backwards 10 months ago, and nobody ever served us, and they were not on e-court.
All kinds of stuff, and we have a paper, I don't know if it's up on the site, but it's written by a retired judge, and he reveals a lot of the fraud and the way it works, and he revealed that they're all paid off, and, you know, welcome to New York, because New York is the best and the worst at this. They actually paid off the Congress and the Senate. They have everybody on the take. That's why it's so hard. That's why we say, you know, why do you go into their courts looking for justice? Because you're not going to get it from them, and hence that's what this grand jury system is all about. The fact that you know, you can go in there and you can play a game, and you could tell all the right stuff and all the constitutional stuff, and they just ignore it. You know, I don't know if you know it, but in New York State, the federal government came in and they said to Cuomo, they looked into the board of judicial review. They had a board, and basically it's judges that sit on it, and they're supposed to watch other judges. And if you have a complaint, you make a complaint to the judicial review board. Well, that judicial review board, it was discovered, had stole millions, not hundreds of thousands, but millions of dollars out of the probate court. Now, they're not even involved in the cases. They're just a judicial review board, but they're out there trolling the money, paying judges off. So they requested that he close down the judicial review board, which he did. Well, now what you have in New York is the Wild Wild West, because when the judicial review board was there, even though it was corrupt, not every judge had a personal relationship with them. And so he wasn't absolutely sure that they would stick up for him. I mean, you know, they're out there trolling the most profitable cases and stealing the money, and that doesn't mean that they won't slap the wrist of some penny ante judge someplace because who's not in their good old boy system just to make it look like they have some credibility. So there was a little bit of control when they were there, maybe a damn little bit of control, but now we have the Wild Wild West, because guess what? There is no Judicial Review Board, they closed them down. You'd think that they would put some kind of a complaint office there. So now you have a situation where the judges know that there's no place for you to even file a complaint. I mean, it's ridiculous that other judges would come out after those judges, because that's, you know, that's the good old boy syndrome. It's like with the cops with the great blue wall. And so they're bought and paid for. And the only way that you get any justice is, like John said, when it gets to the point that you can get them stuck on something where you're able to hold them personally responsible and go after their flesh personally. And even that's hard to do, because especially in New York City, you know, where, you know, you got to find another court and another judge that's willing to entertain that. If they're not going to entertain that, what are you going to do? I mean, you know, the mob system, mobsters came out. And sometimes one of the reasons you had the mob is because the only justice they could get was the justice that they gave themselves. And, of course, they got out of hand. But you think about it. You know, these judges only understand one thing, money or a bullet in their head. And so, you know, you get to the point, and I could see where groups would get together and start vigilante groups against these judges. And the only trouble is, you know, and then you have anarchy. You have no control over anybody. So, you know, look at the Italian mobsters. They used to make peace in the neighborhood because they didn't want the punks in there messing up their system. So they kept the streets clean. There was no petty crime. There was no robbery and rape going on or anything like that. They were busy doing, you know, organized crime. And so they kept the streets good. And that was a level of control. And, you know, that's what they want to do to America. They want us to degrade down into anarchy so that when the time comes, they'll march the foreign troops back in and they'll bring control, and the people will say, oh, thank God, control is coming back. And control will come back, and an enforced peace will come back, but it will come back with no rights and no constitution. And this tyranny that you're experiencing in the courts and that other people are experiencing is all part of that degrading of the peace. See, they're taking the peace away so that they can sell us the solution, and the solution is a dictatorial government with no rights, you know? And that's where we're headed, and I don't think there's much time. And everybody, listen, I could sit here and go on for hours about the cases that we had. Horrible criminal things that went on, and they come back and they go, we got no cause of action, you got done this, done that. They don't care. They don't care. All of them, you know, I mean, some of the federal judges, I think, are understanding that the people are coming. You're starting to see some of these upper judges start to make some better rulings because they realize that at some point this thing is going to go viral and the people are going to come out. And, you know, if they don't start behaving, especially on that level, that they'll be, you know, the streets polls will be lined with first off with the black robes hanging there on the ropes. But, you know, even if a communist government comes in, I got to tell you something. When the powers that be that take over a country do come in, when any communist government that comes in, any fascist communist government, the first thing that they do is they kill all the people that facilitated them. So if we lose our freedom, if we lose our republic and we go down into a dictatorship, those dictators will kill all those people, all those congressmen, all those senators, all those judges that rule to get them in there. They don't want them around because they know that they went against their own countrymen. So they're less than dirt. You know, the Chinese have no respect for President Obama because they know that he's selling out his own countrymen. You know, they call him the monkey man. That's what they call him. So he's over there doing deals, and they're doing what they can do. But, you know, when they're all done, they'll take him out and shoot him first. They'll say, oh, look, we got this rotten guy that ruined your country here, and we're going to hang him just like they did to Saddam Hussein, who was a guy that we put in there, and we empowered him and everything. And then Bush turned him over to the group over there to hang him publicly. Which he made a mistake doing that, because what he did is he made open season on dictators. Usually they never allow the hanging of a leader of a country because they don't want them, you know, they all know that it's potentially could be them next. So I'm going to go on to, we're getting late. We don't have much time. I'm going to open up the mic of 760-447. You got your hand up. Let me unmute you. Are you there? 760-447.
Gerard?
Hello? Yes. Who's speaking?
This
first
is
name
Joe
and
Kelly.
State.
I'm Joe Kelly, and I'm California.
Oh, yes, I know you, Joe. Yes, Joe, how's it going?
Yeah, if I could afford it, I'd go and visit you, Gerard, and I'd really try to talk some sense into John. But the real deal is, to me, and I've put that up already on your website, and I'll try to do this when the website changes, is what people have to focus is not their own axe to grind. What they have to do is they have to see the least defensive, the most innocent, and they have to say, am I going to stand in between that child and the guy who has given an oath to protect them, who is now injuring them? That's what we have to do. We have to stand in between the least who are able to defend themselves, because we can defend them if we decide to, and those who will injure them, who are, in fact, getting an income because they are there to protect them. In other words, we have to stop paying the criminals to be criminals.
Right, and you're talking about what, in family court now? Is that what you're talking about?
Family court, any court that's statutory, and that's the whole thing that I really do think that John is, and that's why I'm here, that's why I volunteered to be the California coordinator.
Just to let you know, I'm back, but go ahead.
Yeah, this is Joe, John. Remember Joe?
Yeah, I remember Joe.
Right, and I'm California. I'm here. I'm the California guy, and this is the biggest state. This is the biggest population state. And the concept is that there are, in the future, cases where a brand new common law grand jury tries a case. And the best case is that it doesn't go to a trial jury. The best case is, in any county that it is in, there is this innocent victim who is being injured by this person who has taken an oath, and this oath says that I will not commit crime. So it's undeniable that this person is committing a crime because he is doing something to injure this person. So there's this individual person, an innocent person who is being injured, and this case is solved by four people in a county, and that will be
exactly. The
first case, and that should be on the CBS, NBC, NBC, CNBC, it should be everywhere that finally somebody, four people stood up and protected this poor innocent person from this person who was supposedly there to protect people, but instead of protecting people, this person used that color of law in order to perpetrate crimes upon this innocent person. So that should be our focus. It shouldn't be, I've been injured by this, and I've been injured by that, and I've this, and I've that, and me. What it should be is the whole country of moral people say, we've had enough, let's do something.
I think that's exactly the way we're going here. You know, we're trying to teach people that we have to have the senses of honor and justice and mercy. We have to focus in. We have to be humble. And we're not here about us. We're here about getting the republic back, to win the republic back. That's our first order of business. Then after that, we're going to be piled on by people who realize we're here, who's going to be looking for remedy. And we're going to hear in a lot of cases. We'll eventually get to our own cases, but they're going to have to be put aside because our duty is to deal with the public and the people and bringing things back to order. I know I have a lot of bones to pick with some people, and I'd like to get around to them if they're left, because these people might be destroyed by other people before I can get to them, or they may leave the town, leave the state, leave the country. Who knows what they're going to do, because they got a lot of skeletons in their closet. So I may never get justice. And that's okay. Justice will come anyway at the end of the world, so that's up to God and that person ultimately anyway. Well, I'll be perfectly happy with having our nation back, perfectly happy to know that we have justice in our courts and that we can go forward and pursue whatever it is we want to pursue in life, and that our children could do that. That's our job, to bring it back to where our children can have a future and could be taught real education in school, and to come out to be productive people in society and be free again. Right now, we're not free. Anybody who thinks this is a free nation, we're more oppressed than most democratic countries out there, and they claim we're a democratic country. We're not, but in any event, we're oppressed a lot more than Europe and a lot of other people, far more. So anyway, anything else?
You know what, Joe, oddly enough, one of our first victories was in family court, helping some guy that they took his child away illegally, and we actually did have a victory on that.
Yeah, we got his kid back. And
we got him out of an order of protection in like 2 weeks, which is unheard of, and they kind of threw the case out of family court because they just didn't have they're not used to people pushing back, we filed so much different paperwork. And the guy that did it was very articulate, and he stood there and he pointed at the judge and the so-called child attorney, and he says, "I'm going to hold you, and you responsible." Well, they didn't like that, and I guess they went to bed at night. So we had a victory. I don't know that we would continue to have victories, but we went in there and kind of gave them a 1-2, and they reeled backwards, and they didn't like the taste of it, and they got rid of the case real quick for us. And that was a victory, and it felt good because it was – the stuff they did is, like you said, here's this poor, innocent kid that they're treating as a pawn, and they were charging this guy $50 an hour to see his kid. He did nothing. It was all bull crap, and they took his kid away. It was so heartbreaking, you know? And it's just funny that sort of was really our first real victory that came through, you know, at the time. And here we are today. We're realizing with all our other court cases with the committee man and the SAFE Act and all this other crap, we realize that you're not going to get it through the judges. It has to be the grand jury. There's no other way. It has to be the people. And we are the people, and we have to keep pushing. And the more we push, and when we do it in force, they'll listen, you see, because when we push back in force, then we are a political power. You know what I mean? Then they have their political lives at stake with us. So really, you know, we have to keep coalescing and coming together and all pushing. And it is happening. It's happening right now. They're not going to tell you, you know, how much people are pushing. We had somebody run us through Facebook the other night and said, you should be here, you should be using Facebook. And I hate Facebook. I know the FBI trolls Facebook and the NSA and all these people, and they try to use it against us. But look, it's a double-edged sword. You can promote your sites. And if the government's going through Facebook and looking at the thousands and thousands and thousands of organizations on there that are popping up every day against gun control, against it, I mean, they're, there are a lot of different issues that everybody's crapping about, but you know what? When it's really the same thing. It's like you said, it's about our morals. It's about, you know, do we have unalienable rights or don't we? Does the, you know what I mean? Does it still, is the contract that the government operates
and
under
think,
still
and the
Constitution?
And I think people are going to answer that question. When we step up and do, we're going to answer it for them. We're going to let them know. We do have those things. Anyway, we only got about 10 minutes left. We got two other callers that haven't been heard from yet, so I think we should move on.
Go ahead, John. I'll
time,
mute myself.
Come back to Joe again. Now, what was that? Joe, you called in on 760?
Yep.
Okay. And 845, what's that? You call?
Yes.
Yeah, we didn't mute call again. So
yeah, that's good. Just
call.
Mute yourself, call. So unless you want to talk, you can pick it up. All right, Joe, I'll leave you open if you want. We'll talk again. But let me go through the other two callers. Mute your mic for a while. Just keep it low in your house, and we'll come back to you some more if you want. But there's two people. I think we didn't get 352, so let me do that first. 352-307. You're being unmuted right now. You should have heard. You're now unmuted. Who's on 352?
I got you loud and clear. It's Ken Ball.
How you doing,
How you doing,
Ken?
John?
Good.
We're doing real good over here.
Good.
Real good, yeah. Just wanted to encourage people. I wanted to, again, thank you for your efforts, and thank you for doing what you've done. If it wasn't for the list of organizers, I wouldn't be, I wouldn't have all the new great friends that I have here in Marion, Florida. And Hagen's doing a fine job moving things forward, and it looks like by early next year we should have 31 counties here in Florida organized. So I just wanted to encourage people to not forget about the list of county organizers that you have on the National Liberty Alliance site, and the phone numbers are there. Call people. This is how you get involved, and you know, if it wasn't for your efforts, I'd have never met these people right here in my own community. So again, thank you.
All right, well, I want to thank everyone for participating. If they didn't participate, we have nothing. It's we the people. So we have to keep focused on the majority, on the people. They got to get up everywhere, and you got to take control of your grassroots right there in your own town, your own counties. You got to take it back, and we'll help you. We'll show you, and then you got to get up and do it, and then we can all work together. And that's the only way we're going to save this nation. Only the people can save America. I'm telling you, nobody else can do it. I believe that Judge Roberts recently, the misunderstood case, the decision that he recently made, he really revealed a lot of stuff for us. If you go and listen very carefully, we posted an MP3 player, an MP3 on that case, and it'll be on the new site. People should listen to that. And also Scalia, the work that he's done, but he can't save the nation. Even if Ron Paul became president, he can't save the nation. One man can't do it. 10 men can't
right.
do it. 100 men can't do it. 1,000 men can't do it. Only the people can do it. We need 4 people minimum in every county. That's 3,141 counties times 4 at a bare minimum to save this nation. And that's not really a lot of people. That's just a handful of people considering. But we don't have government by majority. We have a government by the majority that participates. And you can't
That's
get
right.
12,000 people to do something in one area. It's got to be spread across the country. It's got to be grassroots. It's got to be happening in every county, and they'll get the message, and they'll get it quick. And only the people can save America. The question is, will you? That's the only question
right.
that remains to be answered. And we'll see
I'll tell
you, if
the,
we will.
The
we
efforts
will.
That you've been putting forward and everybody involved, it looks like things are moving at a really nice pace.
I believe so, too, yes. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, looking at the lists and how the lists have built, I was just
yes.
looking at some of the other states to see how large the lists were from when this first started out, and
mm-hmm.
it's moving right along.
Absolutely.
It's moving right along. I'm yep,
Absolutely.
very happy to be involved and be involved with the fine people that I've met here through your efforts.
All right, well, I appreciate the call. Anything else?
Because I know you don't have much time, let you get to that next caller.
Yeah, let me get to one. I got one or two people here. Let's open up the mic to the next person or
417.
Hold on a second.
417-501.
That's
you're
it.
On. This. Are you there? 417-501. Who are you? What state are you in?
This is Clay, Dallas County, Missouri.
How you doing, Clay?
Tired. It's been a long week.
Are you talking off your microphone or off of a telephone?
Microphone.
Okay. Yeah, well, you're better now. You just got closer, so now we can hear you better. Go ahead.
Okay. No, I was just calling to let you know. I've got a new phone number, and I don't have access, of course, to the old site to change it. So if you guys are going to be updating the old site or when you put the new one online.
You can send an email to support@nationallibertyalliance.org. Just tell them you want to change the phone number. And if you don't get that done before next week, when you go on to the new site, you'll be able to do that yourself. Because you'll have settings in there. You'll be able to change your information accordingly.
Well, with the holidays coming up, I think it can wait until next week.
Okay, you'll have it next week. I think by the end of the week, you know, I have to consider the fact that Christmas is here, so there's 2 days these guys aren't going to be working. But hopefully by next week, by the weekend, I'll be talking with them by the end of the week, and by the weekend, hopefully they'll be pretty much got the site ready. We've got all the contents up, as I mentioned before, and so all that is done. All the pages are built and constructed. The framework is up. We got a lot of things going. We've got a lot of RSS feeds. You're going to be really surprised when all the information is going to come in from various places. We got news feeds. We got Supreme Court feeds. We got congressional feeds. We got every state's Congress feeds. We've got law feeds. We got all kinds of feeds. We have Glenn Beck coming through. We got Alex Jones will be coming through. A lot of people. We even got Ron Paul coming through. We got a couple others in news feeds coming through. We're looking for bloggers, so anybody who wants, we're looking for a national blogger. Anybody who believes that they can do a good job and give us some national blogging, focused in on what we're doing, on justice and the political process. Not politics, but the political process. And anybody willing to learn about the real political process as George Washington defined it, and also the justice process and what we're doing here with the grand jury and writing stories on these things. Anybody who wants to pick up that job as a blogger nationally, send me an email or give me a call, 845-233-6560. Don't call me tonight, though. I'm tired. I'm going to go to sleep as soon as this is over, but tomorrow you can give me a call, 845-233-6560. Anything else? We got one other call I'd like to get to before we run out of time. We only got 3 minutes, so let me pull that other call up.
Merry Christmas.
Godspeed and Merry Christmas to you, too. Thank you very much. 203-807, you got the mic.
Yes, hi, John. How you doing? This is Edward calling from Connecticut.
How you doing?
Fine, thank you. It's always good listening to you. You know, every time someone asks a question, you know, we're all learning something out here. But I just wanted to run by this to you as far as with the basic common law. Is there in itself, say, aside from the grand juries that you're working on, is the common law itself, is there limitations and when something could be prosecuted, you know, because with the regular law...
No statute of limitations whatsoever. Zero. Common law does not permit statutes, so therefore there cannot be a statute of limitation. An old case will be prevented from going forward maybe, or being prosecutable, or won maybe because of memory, loss of the people who died or moved out of the area, or loss of the evidence, or things of that nature. A case could deteriorate away, and that'll prevent it from going forward. Other than that, nothing can prevent that case. But we got a minute and a half left, so go ahead.
Yeah, that's fine. That'll be enough. So as long as the evidence is there, which in many cases it is, you know, it should then, and that's definitely. Listed
that's
there,
definite.
That
that's common law. When we get the common law back in process, that's it. We're going to be shutting down in about a minute or so. I'd like to say for Connecticut, I think there's only about 14 or 16 counties over your way, and I don't know how many people are involved in Connecticut. Maybe you can get them together, and maybe you can give me a call after the holiday, and we can get together and try to make a plan for Connecticut. We could probably turn Connecticut over, because I'd like to work with that state. You're right next door to us. We can get them turned over in no time. But with that, we're about to go off the air. Finally, I'd like to wish everyone a Merry Christmas. Godspeed. I'd like to thank everybody for participating. We will continue to be here every Monday, Lord willing. And the new website, Lord willing, will be up and running for next Monday. We'll have our own chat room over there. You'll get emails. Again, get onto the meetup area and get in there for your email if you're not registered on our site, or get registered on our event. Okay, good night, everybody. God bless. See you next Monday. Merry Christmas. Good night.